and he did the quorum of the meeting. I'd appreciate that. Members, just let me take this morning our program. We've got three topics. The first item will be a briefing by the Civilian Secretariat on the EVA report. The second item will be a briefing by the Civilian Secretariat and IPET on the vetting process of senior officials. Honourable members will remember that we had last week a briefing from State Security, and there are certain challenges that we'll have to address, so we will then go to that briefing. I think we already received the briefing document from IPET. I don't know, have we yet received the one from the Secretariat? Okay. And then we also want to welcome the board members of the Community Police Forum. Welcome to them. I think it's their first appearance before Parliament since 1994. So it's a quite historic, I think, meeting, but it's quite important for us, the Portfolio Committee, to interact with all sectors. And I know the Community Police Forums play a huge role, and going forward as well with the white paper process and the new SAS Act, I think the role of the Community Policing Forum is a major issue, and also your role. So to be asked really to get a briefing from your side, what are you doing, what is the challenges, what is the hopes, and what is the recommendation. So that will be a first bit of action, I think, after today, because we first want to get an overview of about all the issues, and then maybe later this year we will again invite you, so welcome. We're very glad to have you there. Honourable members, that has been our program for the day. In terms of the first item, there was a document made available to members. There's also a document that was made available by the researchers, and I think that is also available. Maybe before we, I must just maybe indicate, let's maybe first give an opportunity for the honourable members to introduce themselves, and then we'll give an opportunity to the delegation from the Civil Secretariat, and we'll come to the Community Police Board later. I'm giving an opportunity to the honourable members.
My name is Jerome Ake, and I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Angie Muliwaki. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Morning, my name is Cindy Lamona, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Morning, I'm Diane Kerr Barnard.
My name is Lucky Tola, a member of the committee.
My chairman is Michelle Lamona, a member of our committee.
Thank you very much. We will then ask the Civilian Secretary to introduce the delegation.
Good morning, members. My name is Luyan Kompo. I have one team from Civilian Secretary of Police. I'll give them the opportunity to introduce themselves. At the same time, I need to indicate that the Secretary has just delayed. She's added to another meeting. She is on her way.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Ayanda Kumana from the Secretary of Police.
My name is Sam Maote. I'm the liaison officer for the Civilian Secretariat for Police.
Thank you for that. Maybe before we start, just two issues. The one is there's one report outstanding, the report of August or April. If we maybe can be elucidated on where is that report, because that report needed to have been tabled. The second issue is just the issue of quality control. I believe that the document has been read thoroughly through, but I've on page 933, for instance, I pick up where it should be from, its form, and so on. So just the question of, that's an important issue for the committee, that quality control should be adhered at all times. So that's a small flag. But if we can just maybe, before we start, just get an indication of where is that other report, the August April report. Thank you.
In our previous presentation last year, we presented two reports. The one was from October to March, and then the other one was from April to September the previous year. So this is the one from another one, follow up from those ones. Then the next one will be coming in the next presentation.
So you're saying that October to April 2015 report is with us?
That one is still being prepared because we're still consolidating information from the provinces.
So we need to envisage will it tabled?
It has been finalized and it's been tabled before the end of this quarter.
What about it?
Actually, it's still not right what you see procedural because they should have got quarterly. Quarterly means 3 months. Thanks, sir.
Honorable Chair, our understanding was that we were reporting 6 monthly, not quarterly. Yes, but then the challenge we're having is that we're reporting, we made this request previously, that we're reporting 6 months behind because we have to consolidate information from provinces. So this current 6 months report that the chairperson is referring to, the provinces submitted information in January. So then we consolidate that in April. For that period of October until the end of March. Then they submit their report in April, so we consolidate them for finalization by the end of June.
Thank you very much. I will give you an opportunity then to present the report, but just maybe another flag. We had interaction on the 5th of November with the Secretary, where we raised sharply certain issues with regard to the representative of the sample, the provinces. I mean, we've got a presentation today. We only want station of KZN is reflected. Now, again, the whole issue of the validity arises, and I mean, certain instances, compliance, non-compliance, the sample, we are now nearly in June, and it's really not good enough to indicate that we are addressing the issues of such SA. It's 6-7 months down the line. It's just not good enough. And I mean, hopefully we will get a proper explanation, but I must from the committee side indicate that at the beginning. For us to have an overview of the total picture in the country, we need a proper sample. We can't make an analysis or even, recommendations based on one station in KZN, which consists 25% of the country's population. So I think we really need to rethink the approach, but I also will give members after the presentation opportunity, but you're welcome to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
Chair. Thank you, Chair. The South African government is committed to the international, regional and local treaties and legislations that promote robust interventions against domestic violence. Central to the Constitution of South Africa is the Bill of Rights, which promotes the right to equality, freedom, and the security of people. GVA, IT, and Civilian Secretariat for Police Act serve as pillars in ensuring that GVA matters are taken seriously in South Africa. We note doubt the need for the amendments of the Domestic Violence Act. Recent interactions with the leadership of South African Police Service have proven to be meaningful. We can report to the committee that the SOP has been signed between SAS and CSP to deal with the DVA, and SAS has committed itself to give support to the compliance forum. We trust that this strategic initiative will assist in institutionalizing DVA interventions across the country. DVA matters are now part of the consultative forum agenda between IP and CSP. Amongst others, it is the responsibility of this forum to identify any policy and strategic matters that require the attention of the minister. My colleague will take us through the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Gender-based violence is recognized both within South Africa and internationally as a profound violation of human rights and a major barrier to social and economic development. The Domestic Violence Act, number 116 of 1998, was introduced by the government of South Africa with the purpose of attempting to provide victims of domestic violence with an accessible legal instrument with which to prevent further abuses that take place within the domestic relationship. In terms of the Surveillance of Child Rape for Police mandate, we are mandated to monitor and evaluate sub-compliance with the DA, to make recommendations to the police service on disciplinary procedural measures with regard to non-compliance to the Domestic Violence Act, to provide the Minister of Police with reports with regard to implementation of compliance with policy directives issued and instructions made by the Minister. The Act further empowers the DSP to take over the responsibilities related to monitoring implementation of DVA that were previously carried out by the former ICD, which is currently known as the IP. As a result of this conclusion, Section 18 of the DVA has been repealed in terms of the IP Act number 1, 2011, and all matters of exception of the DVA that refer to the role of the ICD have been substituted by the Secretariat. However, this has not been done in terms of the actual amendment of the DVA. In terms of the methodology and something that we are using as the Secretariat of Chariot with our monitoring role, we together with Provincial Secretariat, in this during this reporting period, we conducted a total of 160 consultation audits between the 1st of April and the 30th of September 2014. And as outlined there, I think as the charity made reference to, those are the numbers in terms of how many were done by each province. The Eastern Cape conducted 18, Free State 25, Gauteng 46, KZN 1, Limpopo 19, Mpumalanga 15, Northwest 22, Northern Cape 2. Northern Cape also conducted follow-up visits, which amounted to 4, so they conducted 6 in total. However, they are reflected in the graph because there were follow-up visits and they did not implement the, they did not administer the entire tool. And the Western Cape conducted 8 visits. The audits were conducted utilizing the DVA monitoring tool, which is implemented through interviewing via officials within police stations. Provinces are expected to audit a minimum of 8 police stations during a 6-month period and agreed upon during the CFP Heads of Departments Forum. Due to limited capacity, the Civil Secretariat also carried out 8 station audits during this period. The Civil Secretariat is not prescriptive in terms of the maximum number of audits to be conducted by provinces, as that is dependent on the capacity and resources of each province. This has led to the number of audits being conducted per province to vary considerably. It should also be noted that despite the minimum of 4 audits per quarter, which equals to 8 within a 6-month period, there are provinces who are unable to meet the minimum target set, and reasons were provided to this effect. And this included lack of capacity, among others. Also, another challenge was the focus on the priorities of the MEC. Some provinces indicated that because of the priorities of the MEC, they had to focus on those, and then that impacted on the number of audits they conduct for the GVA. And also the restructuring of the departments with the aim of establishing a provincial secretariat that impacted on the number of people that were allocated to do the work. Based on the above, then, the findings on this report are not an extrapolation of the entire staff population in the country and therefore cannot be generalized for the whole country. The findings are only applicable to the 156 stations that were visited. However, if there is a need for further analysis to be done, one can look at stations with the same attributes and then make those generalizations. In order for us to improve the screening method, the CSP is currently engaging with STEF-SA. This will assist us in ensuring that we get a representative sample that will be able to consider the number of stations per province and therefore ensure that each province is able to audit stations that are representative of that particular province, rather than the blanket approach just saying HR stations must be audited within a 6-month period.
So that's welcome to the acting secretary this morning. I think that is precisely the point we raised. We raised this on the 5th of November in this committee. And we said it's difficult to rely on that report because of the representativity. Now we're confronted 7 months later. I think it's more skewed if you take KZN 25% of the Turkish population and only one station has been visited. So, I mean, the value for the committee, that's my concern. We spend resources, but I mean, my interest is what has been done since November until now to finalize the issue of Stash SA in terms of the sample. Are we going to come back in August, and it is the same story. So we need some clarification, real clarification, because we can't accept this.
Honorable, we've met with Status A, and they've discussed with us what will be the representative sample nationally, and therefore what will be the representative sample provincially. And that's just going to be discussed now with HODs so that they are able to implement this, and we are hoping that then we will have compliance thereafter.
Thank you, Jason. Honorable Chair, there's your question about we cannot, based on that which is being presented to us, make any view or informed a view on what HR status is on the ground. Can perhaps we suggest that the committee goes back, do proper research. When that is done, then come back to the committee and make a proper presentation. Against this sample, we cannot deduct or deduce anything with which to work. I would urge that we advise the committee to go back, once it is done, come back, and then we will take from this. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. On the 5th of November, I think, the acting secretary agreed with the committee that the testing method would be reviewed. And maybe we need to be told how far is the view. Thank you.
The members on the same topic? Honorable Kaliba.
See, our program is so onerous. For us to waste time doing what we actually did how many months ago, 6 months ago, without the information we asked for, then seems a waste of our time, frankly. So I think Honourable Member to my right, he suggested that maybe we ask him to go back to the drawing board and start again when we have all the information. I mean, really, I'm from KZN to suggest there's just one, and in 6 months, or only one, that has been visited there is quite horrendous. So unless they can provide some sort of adequate explanation, I think let's just cut our losses and move on.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see on page 6, bullet point number 3, it is said that due to limited capacity, if the problem is limited capacity and we send them back, are we solving the problem? Will they manage with the capacity that they have now? I mean, only if their problem is limited capacity. But if that is the problem and it's not changed, I don't see how they can change the situation. But that would come from them. But in any way, I mean the sampling method. If you are going to tell us that bullet point number 4, it is not prescriptive in terms of the maximum number of audits to be conducted, as it is dependent on the capacity and resources of each province. I mean we are moving in circles. If there are no resources, then it means this type of situation won't change. So just if we can hear from them, or can they be able to change the situation with the capacity that they have now? If they can't, then there's no need for us to send them back, because they'll come up with the same report. Thank you, Chairperson.
What about Bishop?
Chairperson, thank you. I should think if they had any challenges, they were supposed to have indicated that to this committee, and therefore it means they know how to maneuver, they know how to deal with issues that we expect them to do, because every month there is money from government going into their pockets. And value for money is one of the Batugini principles. Therefore, I'm asking the committee to agree on the point that they must go back they will say how to come back and satisfy the committee. We cannot go on in cycles because we are dealing with monies here. That is going to them, that is going to project and so on. If they have a problem, a challenge with capacity, that is their own belly to say how to be assisted. And they were supposed to have done that long ago. So I just think let's not waste any more time on this issue. Let's just agree that they go back and they will see how to come back to the committee. Thank you.
I think the important thing is to indicate, and we heard that also yesterday from the Minister of Women in Presidency, the fight against violence, you know, family violence, is a apex priority of this government. Now, if one province, and I mean the regions, is different priorities of MECs, but if there's only one DVA inspection in 6 months in my province, clearly there's a big problem. And it should be addressed, you know, as a matter of urgency. I think I will give an opportunity to the acting secretary to respond. But I think to agree with the members that, you know, there must be a situation where the sampling methodology is sorted out. There's also, of course, issues raised regarding SAPs later in the presentation. So maybe an option would be maybe to send them back and get also SAPs and the National Commissioner here later. You know, that's maybe a possibility. But let's first give an opportunity to the acting secretary and get their response on the input of members.
Thank you, honorable members. We note the concerns raised by the members around the representativity of the sample. And you know, one of the challenges that were raised, because there is an issue of the sample, and that there is an issue, as it was indicated, there is an issue of the resources. And also taking note of this relationship between the two organizations, because ours is to convince the different provinces around this issue, and that if one looks at our mandate to impose to the provinces, it is quite a challenge given the nature of when one looks at in terms of the act. However, engagements have started. We are lucky to have also representatives from the KNFN here, which has started to establish at a level of districts the capacity. And that this matter is a matter that is in the agenda of the HODs. However, we noted that whilst this is not a representative sample, but it does give us insight as to some of the challenges that were faced and then some of the successes. But this is a matter that we are, as an organization, we are taking serious given the limitations which we are faced with in terms of the aid. Because as indicated initially, the provinces initially they have agreed that a minimum of 8 police stations would be looked upon. But we take note of this, and that let me give the secretary, and it is a matter that is under discussion.
Please bear with me. What is the name of the gentleman who just spoke, and what is his capacity?
My apologies. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. And my apologies for coming late, and then also my apologies for letting the acting MEC chief director respond on my behalf. The reason I had asked him to respond was because I think that a lot of the comments were for noting, and I didn't want us to sound defensive. And indeed, we take the comments of the portfolio committee very, very seriously, and we will expedite the meeting of the HOD so that progress in respect of our engagements with this sector of Africa can be implemented. One of the reasons also why I was quiet was because now that I'm here a bit longer, I have an appreciation for the fact that the statistics that we are representing or that we presenting today is not representative of the population, but rather it's an accrual statistical methodology. So ideally, we want to visit every single police station in the country. And so a representative sample methodology would not be optimal. So, and then at the same time, we're saying that even though the number of police stations that were visited is not optimal and is not representative, we can't dismiss the content that arose from the outcome of that visit. Let's say that in the example. I'll use as an example, let's say in one of the police stations is 100% non-compliant. The fact we discovered that there's non-compliance at that police station, the fact that we're engaging SAPS on it and getting SAPS to ensure that something is being done about that police station, the fact that 159 out of the 160 police stations were not fully compliant, and the fact that we were able to engage SAPS around the fact that interventions need to be done where those 159 have shortcomings, shouldn't just be dismissed because that 159 is not representative of all the police stations in the country. So where we have a concern is when the media takes the report that we are presenting and generalizes it and says that this is the state of all police stations in the country. That's a concern for us. But our other concern is service delivery. And so for us, from the perspective of service delivery, the 160 visits is indeed very important, and the fact that we are able to tell SAPS where the shortcomings are and SAPS is acting on that recommendation is also important. Nonetheless, the comments of the Solar Committee is noted.
Secretary, I want to swear. Thank you, Mr. Just a follow-up coming from comments that have been made. You have reasonable that we have raised our concern around. Okay. And I'm saying it's not a sample upon which we can begin to measure the degree of progress that is being done in the area. One. Two. There appears to be the other arm in this relationship also ought to place by the police in terms of assisting you accessing these police stations or creating an enabling environment for yourselves to achieve objectives. Now, would you attribute some of the challenges that you have as in relation to the sampling express emanating from SAPS in terms of our cooperation with you in accessing you the police stations against which then do your investigations? Would that be one of the problems? If they are, how would you then want this committee to interface with SAPS if you can be new?
I think that will be the last question and the response, and then you're going to make the decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Mr. Tola. The challenge indeed is human power, not currently Ayanda is the only person. I know Mr. Ramatlakhan was saying that we mustn't come to push for the committee to lament ours, but we must act on it. But the reality is that currently it's one person that is facilitating all of this. And then even the provincial secretaries are very understaffed. So they're really doing their best within the constraints that they have. And then also with regards to SAPS, we've been receiving relatively good cooperation, but it's not been consolidated with the SOP that Rianda presented to the Botswana Committee.
Thank you for that. I think what we will do, we will take the report as tabled, but we will ask the Secretariat to come back to us, but we'll also invite SAPS. Because if you go through the report, it's only Brooklyn Police Station in the whole country that is complying. So the National Commission has got to answer to that. I mean, are they serious in ensuring that DVL is implemented? So we'll ask the Secretariat, we thank them for the presentation, but I think I must go back and deal with the issue we raised on the 5th of November regarding the sounding issue, and what is the status of your negotiations with FATSA, and what's the outcome? Because we said, you know, 6-7 months down the line, there must be a product and there must be implementation, because otherwise we're going to have this problem all over again, that the companies are the representative, and we don't know what is the future in the country. I mean, the fight against domestic violence is an apex priority of government. We also urge the Secretary that the UMNIC must be used to ensure that those provinces who are not complying, that they come on board. Because we can't have a situation where people do not, you know, implement the act as envisaged. So we will, so we need an update on those info, and I think we'll also invite CHEPS, and then that we can have a discussion on where we go forward with this. Because I think CHEPS, if you look at the report table today, it's not acceptable. It can't be any Brooklyn police station in the country, even if the sample is underrepresented and not representative. We can't have that. Of course, it's indicated that's now part of the performance of the cluster commanders and station commanders, performance agreements. But it's only the Western Cape and Gauteng that's taking discipline steps against errant police officers. Why are the other 7 promises not coming on board? So we need answers on that. So I think that will be the route. Honourable Molebatsi.
This book, the Brooklyn suburb, is the one of the upper suburbs in Pretoria. So I'm sitting here, I'm asking myself, how was this done? You know, the most upper suburbs in Pretoria, in Brooklyn and Waterloo.
Thank you, members. I think that is, and we will then at the appropriate time call back to secretaries as well as SAPs. But I think what is essential, we must have now a game plan, because we're actually where we were in November. The sampling is a problem, but it's not a clear roadmap. So from the committee side, we need urgency on the matter, and we need results. So we dealt now with item 1. Item 2 deals with the vetting issue. I just want to know, the secretariat, is IPED here? I think let's continue with item 3. At this stage, we'll keep item 2 for then for last. Let us deal with item 3.
Are you ready? The national.
Chair, can we? Good morning to you and all the honourable members. Can we kindly request for a break? The copies are coming from.
Good members, let's take a 5 minute break and we come back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, we're going to continue with item 3 that is currently on the agenda. We'll deal with item 2 just after that. So we welcome the board members of the Community Police Forum. As indicated, it's the first time since 1994. The that appear before portfolio committee. Parliament is quite important for portfolio committee that we, you know, have all the institutions before us and get a broader understanding of their role. We especially interested in the importance of community police forums going forward. If the chair can just maybe, you know, indicate who is with him, and then we'll take it in from there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I think we are elated to the invitation and very excited for that matter to appear before you for the first time to present our frustrations. But let me start by introducing the delegation that I'm with. On my far right, on your left for members on the other side is Mushoni. He's also the chairperson of the Free State Community Police Board. Next to him is Mr. Mafuna, who is also Deputy Secretary of the National Board. Next to me is Mr. Oman, who is the Deputy Chairperson of the National Police Board. On my left is Elma Shaile, who is the PRO of the National Community Police Board and also the Chairperson of Gauteng Province. And next to him is Mr. Gweta, who is the Chairperson of the Eastern Cape. Next to Gweta is Maggie, who is also the Chairperson of the Western Cape. And next to her is the Deputy Chairperson of the Northwest Community Police Board. Next to him is Mr. Mpambo, the Chairperson of the KZN Police Board. Thank you, Chairperson. Although I didn't see, sorry. sorry, next to Mr. Mpambo is the Maguchana, who is the Treasurer of the National Community Police Board. Thank you, Chairperson. And I would want to extend an apology for the Secretary General of the National Community Police Board, Mr. Pillay, who had a sudden death in the family, and he's also from Mpumalanga. Thank you, Chairperson. And maybe before, without any further ado, Chairperson, I would like to hand over to my deputy to make the presentation. Maybe he is protected by you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm having a burning issue. I see it's almost a bush choir here, Bafana Bafana. I'd like them to, at least before we start, make us to understand why are we having a bush choir, a men's choir, please. If you can, before, so that, you know, I'm free to listen to them and to listen to what they are going to give to us. With a
background. Thank you, if you can just be there is that issue and then we can continue. Thanks.
Chairperson, I ask my colleague here to respond to this. Thank you, sir, and honorable members. The Community Police Forum comprises of elected members from ordinary communities. It is against that background that people who elect who is going to lead, and in most instances elect people that they think have the capability to lead. The issue of gender at provincial board level is determined by those who vote others into office. We are very sensitive of the issue of gender at this level. The unfortunate part is, for now, there is no way in which I, on behalf of the board, can say I'm going to stay home and bring someone else back, because to become a member of the national board is by virtue of being a provincial chairperson. We are currently working on ensuring that the next level of leadership is properly structured, not only according to gender, but there's a race balance and all the other important government priorities.
Thank you. You can continue.
Thanks. I'll hand over to Omen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, our presentation is not in atrophy. We have requested service of parliamentary staff to assist us with that. So they're still busy with those copies. We hope that by May, before we leave here, they'll be ready and then they can be distributed. But we apologize, since 1994 is the first time we come. So, answered off by introducing one of three documents that we have, because I think that is the submission that we wanted to make to the portfolio committee. And those other two documents are the two documents that are assisting PESCO. The CDFs are a legally recognized entity that represents the policy interests of the community nationally. And if we refer to nationally, we start from local level to cluster level to provincial level and national level. In terms of legislation, the community, through the CPS, has the power to monitor, evaluate, and advise the police, and to inquire into police matters. We are seeing that we've got a cable here that says, in the Eastern Cape, we've got 193 police stations. We've got 27 clusters and 192 CPS. So we've got one CPF that is non-functional in the Eastern Cape. And in KwaZulu-Natal, we've got 184 police stations. We've got 25 clusters. The 184 CPFs are established. In Free State, 110 police stations, 18 clusters, 110 are established. In the Northern Cape, we have 91 police stations, 16 clusters, 91 CPFs. In that area. Western Cape, we've got 150 police stations, 25 clusters, 149 CPS are established, and one is not established. In Mpumalanga, we've got 86 police stations, 50 clusters, 86 are functioning, and zero is not functional. In the Northwest, 82, 12 clusters, 82 stations are functional. In Gauteng, 141 police stations, 32 clusters, 141 are functional. In Limpopo, 97 police stations, 16 clusters, 96 are functional and one is not functional. So in total, we've got 1,134 stations, 176 clusters nationally, and 1,131 are functional and three are non-functional. It should be noted in this diagram, if it is interrogated, cognizance should be taken about the absence of the sectors which average at all prestations, which will be about 3,393 sectors in the country except district representatives, which have not been quantified for now. If a calculation of statutory individuals or heads within the CPS and boards amounts to 57,030 subscribed members to CPS or boards, if these active members could be effectively utilized, South Africa could be a better place as far as crime and the transformation is concerned. The police being a national competence, the development of CPS has been uneven, resulting in some functioning more effectively, particularly those in more affluent areas where resources communities aren't a challenge. Our introduction to issues around the world governance actors, analysts, and activists are grappling with this issue of exploring how best to engage citizens in government decision-making, especially in policy-making processes. Ongoing participation and involvement of the people are central aspects of our governance system. This effort gives practical meaning to accessible and accountable government and breathes life to the declaration that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, united in our diversity. Policy formulation processes. In the past, the civilian internal for police open a process for CPS to input on policy with the sole purpose of seeking support for its pre-planned initiatives. Similarly, it sought legitimacy through such process by increasing ownership of our support for a predetermined agenda. In such instances, CPS may be given the opportunity to obtain information on a proposed secretariat intervention and to add their views. But where participation is limited to a tokenistic process, it will lack the power to ensure the views of CPS are heeded by the powerful, where there is no genuine empowerment. The participation process simply became an instrument for managed intervention. discussing the consequences of superficial or cosmetic processes. The CP has found that what at first appeared to be an opportunity to greater influence turned out in practice to be a cosmetic exercise. They gained little or no leverage. They felt caught and betrayed. That's how the National Community Police Board felt all along, before the arrival of the present Minister of Police and the appointment of a new acting Secretary for Police. There is a sense that the CPS and boards are often co-opted into participating in a process with a predetermined outcome of being excluded from an inner circle enjoying privileged access to decision makers. There's a tendency by the civilian sector for police to call CPS input only in the advanced stages of policy formulation, largely done in an attempt to acquire political buy-in and implementation, rather than at the outset when problems and solutions were being developed. The white paper is our one amongst others, an example. Since the legislation of CPS in 1995 and its establishment thereafter, CPS were not resourced, either through a budget for its programs or provision of infrastructure. For example, office accommodation and transport to carry out functions as prescribed in Chapter 7 of the South African Police Service Act. Due to the lack of support towards resourcing community police programs, community support is dwindling and communities are losing interest in working with the police. This could result in either greater privatization of the policing in wealthier areas or more self-policing or vigilantism in poorer areas. The tools in the sphere. The green or white paper on safety and security, complemented by the SAPS Act, outlines CPS as a tool to operationalize community policing. The CPS as a tool could not find a platform due to the absence of a strategy. The white paper and the National Crime Prevention Strategy hasn't been translated into a strategic design, and it's highly questionable as to why. Policy outputs in respect of outlined legislation were not fully defined or translated. There's a lack of understanding of relevant clear policies and legislative frameworks. Examples are the non-alignment of the MCEF, the war of priorities, and the lack of policy or legislative alignment and coalition. This situation has been worsened by the absence of a strategic design and a direction, and the non-cooperation and support of the JPCS cluster and primary stakeholders too. It has always been the contention by the National Community Police Board that the Civilian Secretariat of Police has been clutching at straws over the past years, concerning themselves with business issues that border on semantics rather than substance. The contention of the SPS, barring the lines between an organization and a forum, is baseless and mute. Whether the cat is black or white is immaterial, for as long as it can catch the mice, that's crucial. The other factor that's a cause for concern is the flagrant disregard by the policy unit for community consultation on edge participation. The philosophy of policing in South Africa. Community policing is the current policing strategy for South Africa. However, this policing approach is being resisted and not optimally implemented. This can be validated through analysis of the quality of police participation, which in most cases is still left to the community police officer, who's of a low rank. Community policing is the current policing strategy for Africa. However, this policing approach is being resisted and not optionally implemented. This can be validated through analysis of the quality of police participation, which in most cases is still left to the community police officer, who is a low-rank police. This capacitating and skill development of CPS members have been left in most cases to provincial secretaries for safety and security. The sustenance of the capacity within CPS regime is very imperative. This should be enhanced by introducing appropriate measures for CPS and boards. The location. Where we come from has brought with it not only its history but elements of effecting changes. That one has far-reaching consequences in the CPF region. It should be noted that most of the initiatives were introduced before the establishment of the Civilian Service of Police as a free-fledged department. Hence, the CPF could not assume its rightful place as envisaged by the Constitution. It is therefore imperative that the section partnership within the police should be revisited to determine whether it, CPF, is rightfully located within the police instead of the CSA. It stands to reason that the section partnership within the division RESPOL should wrap up all the activities and hand over the running thereof to the police. It is therefore our humble submission that CPS or board should be rightfully and urgently located within the CSP as an extension of the oversight mandate. Critical analysis of the interim regulations of 2001. Although the interim regulations as the authority of law, it doesn't engage either with explicit direction provided by the minister or the direction provided by the CPS in the white paper. Rather, the regulations direct CPS to fulfill the ambitious and contradictory objectives laid down for them in the Act and focus mainly on the procedural establishment of CPS and their boards. One, the interim regulations either directly avoids or downgrades the issue of state support for CPS. They even specifically outlaw some practices of the CPS that facilitate support for their activities. An issue here is the contested status of CPS. The crux of the matter is whether they may be considered formal organs of the state or not, and therefore whether or not the state has an obligation to sustain and support them. In fact, there's no doubt of this. The CPS were created by legislation and exercise public functions in terms of that legislation. Therefore, South Africa's Constitution, Section 239, obliges the state to ensure that these structures are able to meet their intended purpose. I do on number three. This obligation has not been acknowledged in any practical or systematic manner. Thus, while the objectives of policy guiding the implementation of community policy in South Africa have changed, government ambivalence towards providing meaningful support to the structures created by this policy has remained inconsistent. Given such government aversion towards providing meaningful support to CDFs, how is it that these structures will be able to reach into and garner support from South Africa's diverse, fragmented communities? To put the question differently, in the absence of clear direction and systematic support, how plausible is it that these structures will be able to help make public safety and police in everybody's business? This has also displayed the sheer ignorance by such top management to assume statutory powers that aren't accorded to such by law. This is reflected in the interim regulations, where the National Commissioner assumed powers to introduce regulations over the CPS, powers only accorded to the Minister of Police by the Constitution and the Act. Utilization of statistics by South African police services. The police service has extensive data and vast amounts of information in respect of a variety of problems. Unfortunately, the information is gathered for reasons other than problem solving. Statistics and other information are kept in record by police institutions for inter alia the following purpose. 1. To respond to negative criticism when it is received. 2. To give answers to politicians when the police are expected to justify themselves. 3. To announce the success of the police actions. The view of mass records in respect of sexual assaults, vehicle thefts, or public violence may be an effective way to reveal related characteristics, the specific circumstances that distinguish them and that they are for policy purposes. Community policing calls for a more sophisticated approach to evaluation, one that looks at how feedback information is used, not only how it is measured, how it measures outcomes. It should be noted that no monitoring, evaluation, or evaluation can be done without the formulation of performance evaluation criteria and the development of evaluation instruments. Okay, we've got the recommendations. The recommendations and achievements by the National Community Police Board. I just want to quickly go to that.
please allow you to link up the system. Maybe meanwhile, welcome. I see the Deputy National Commissioner and his delegation has arrived. Welcome to General Sitole. Maybe they want to sit on that side, you know, around the table. We weren't, you know, we weren't informed that there will be a delegation from SAP. Only early this morning received the facts. But anyway, over the SMS. So welcome. You're also welcome to contribute and participate. So I think maybe on that side, if you get us maybe where Honourable McConnell and company sits, if your delegation can take your place around the table. Welcome to them. Since your sponsor has arrived, you will have to be careful with your accommodations. I don't know whether you're going to get a flight back, but you will have to continue.
Thank you, sir. Good recommendations. Within the scope of the current legislation, the following must be considered for short to medium implementation. Various profiling of the Minister of Police and the Civilian Secretary for Police. The review of the interim CPS regulations so as to ensure it responds to the object of community policing as outlined in Chapter 7 of the subset. The review of the civilian secretariat so as to ensure it responds to the letter and spirit of the constitution of the country in accordance with the CPS as an integral part of the secretariat. National instruction will be issued for the division response to start a process of relocating some of the city responsibilities to the CSP. The National Community Police Board and Provincial Community Police Board be immediately relocated to the Civilian Secretariat of Police and Provincial Civilian Secretariat of Police. South West Pole and CSP must budget for all CPF programs. The immediate process of signing of MOUs by the Minister with the Minister of other government departments, the CSP to initiate and set up the process. The Civilian Secretariat for Police must lead the process for the implementation of payment of stipends to CPS structures and formalize the expanded public works program for the sub-forums. A funding model should be developed and it must be inclusive of the non-state organs in the fight against crime. Focus must be given to the development of portable skills for the benefit of CPFs by building safer communities. A national instruction must be issued on improving the quality of SAPS participation. Guidelines must be developed by civilian centers of police for the establishment of street or village committees. This must be accountable to the community police forum. CPS must be engaged in responding to and educating communities on the impact of protest action, particularly where this protest action results in violence and destruction of community centers and infrastructure. A strategic planning session must be held for the National Community Police Board. The Civil Secretariat of Police must develop a concept to engage CPS on oversight of staff at station level. This will assist the Civil Secretariat of Police considering that there are 1,137 police stations and will allow a footprint at each of these. Drafting of a national CPS or board's constitution. A national patroller policy be developed and an evaluation tool for functionality of CPS is presently development. Now the achievements of the national board. Approval of the CPS logo and Python it. Second achievement is the development of a donation policy for CPS. Third one is a training manual on introduction to community police forums that was developed. Orientation for the community police board on the training manual. Development of the emblem, the establishing of people's structures. Evaluation tool for functionality of CPFs and bonds. Patroller's policy. Pilot testing program and train the trainer workshop completed. Pilot program of Soul City in Northwest Province, Western Cape, the Mbokweni South African Police Service and CPF, and the Pusa West campaign, and the development of a community policy strategy. That is an achievement that we think as a board.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We appreciate it. Welcome to General Sithole, Tina Rematala. We're also very lucky to have the acting secretary. So if there's anything from their perspective, because I think it's an important presentation, it also, you know, relates to the issues we're going to deal with the white paper and also SAPS Act later, maybe this year and next year. So I think first let's give an opportunity to General Sithole if he's got anything to add, and then to the acting secretary.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and good morning to you also and honourable members and all other colleagues around the table. We also want to start with an apology for being a little bit late. We were still having the 12 o'clock, that is the invitation. But firstly, let me confirm the earlier part. That the chairperson was presenting. Well, what we just want to confirm and put straightforward to the committee is that the creation of all the challenges that are outlined by the chairperson is the absence of a community policing strategy. And that we have also pointed out together with them, and we've agreed. And according to legislation promulgated, we were supposed to have worked on it right from the white paper on safety and security, and informed by the white paper on transforming the public service. But we've then taken stock of all the other legislation that came thereafter, and began to say, I think we went to a stage of confusing CPF and community policy. Yet the one is a concept, is a policy concept, and the other one is a tool to implement the other. So if then you go into a strategy, then the two will then work together and then and complement each other. So our thinking then is that if we then maybe unlock the issue of the strategy, we will not speak to any other problems. But in our engagement also, Chairperson, important to mention is that immediately I started in this function, I engaged them, we pointed this out. But then I asked the National Commissioner to allow us a session to develop the strategy. And they did themselves attend, and they took that process of developing the strategy, working together with General Pinar and the team from the police. And that particular strategy was finalized, because at the moment is a final draft. And we presented this particular document a day before yesterday to the National Commissioner. And the National Commissioner has also given direction and okay to it so that we take it forward. What could be extremely important is maybe to propose also to the committee and to everyone to say, let's go and finalize and finalize the strategy and then take it through the right processes via the National Commissioner, the National Minister of Police. Then we come back to the committee and present that particular strategy together. There's quite a lot of issues in the strategy, but the strategy then depicts community policing as it was defined in terms of the democratic policing concept. But nature,
before then whether community policing should be the secretariat of the police. To us, that would not matter much. But what should remain important is that constitutionally, the national commissioner is responsible to implement community policing. And when I'm saying community policing, I'm not referring to CPS. Because the tool may be located within secretariat, but the operationalization of community policy is a constitutional issue, and the national commissioner must do it. Now, from our side, we will implement community policy, make sure it's operationalized. The secretariat may be in charge of the tool, but we can bring the tool together with the operationalized community policy. That's why we said let us all be involved in the strategy. But maybe at a if you permit, General Pina is just going to briefly talk less than 5 minutes on the legislation that are there. But the just important to indicate is that the current legislation governing community policy, they did not develop to a point where they clearly outlined community policy. Like for instance, from our side, we've got the Police Act. It does talk about the boards, the structures, but it doesn't define the role of the government. It speaks to us as the police. Then you come to the rest of the other legislation. Now, I think for that particular strategy to be implemented effectively, there would be a need for certain legislative changes and adjustments. I don't want to list them. And the one that is key, each and every strategy in government need to have funded mandates. The reason why the chairperson says community policing was never resourced is correct. There's no funded mandate for it. There's no strategy that should link the Public Finance Management Act. Because before you get to any funded mandate, your strategy must link the Public Finance Management Act so that you comply. If you don't link the Public Finance Management Act and go to a policy development that allows you to have a funded mandate, then you're going to go into unauthorized expenditure. So these are just the few complexities that I want to point out, but I don't want to stay too long. Just with your permission, please, can I allow you to just from less than 5 minutes on the legislation? Thank you.
Thank you, General Sitore. General Glover.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. It might be less than 5 minutes. I think some of the aspects has already been covered by General Sipulian, and I trust that we came into the presentation. This might have been already covered in the presentation by the board. If it is, I think the Chairperson will just indicate as much. The current legislation that applies to the community policing structures, and I think General Sipulian has correctly pointed out that the legislation speaks to community policing and the mandate of the National Commission or the Police Service in the Constitution, but in the Police Act and in the interim regulation, it speaks specifically to the structures. So we have a section 18 to 23 of the Police Act that speaks to the object of community policing, the provisions for the establishment of structures at specific levels, specifically these forums, then applied for area boards and provincial boards. And what we have done is apply the provisions for the area boards to the clusters, given that the police structures changed from when the regulations were originally implemented. But that is one of the issues that would need to be corrected so that when we deal with the updating or the review of the Act and the regulations, one would need to correctly refer to the current organizational structure of police and reflect the clusters, not the areas. The next provision specifically for the community policing in the White Paper for Safety and Security that was signed up in 1998, but this also was referenced to local government. But some of those provisions was ever implemented. So we basically, I think we were an expectation that after the white paper there would be certain changes with the regulations that didn't happen at the time. And that's something that we need to deal with now to make sure that what is currently envisaged in the white papers that the Secretary is busy with is also then carried through to the Police Act and the regulation that speak to community policing and community policing structures in particular. The Police Act, specifically the restrictions that I've mentioned, also makes provision for provincial commissioners to act when they establish community policing structures according to the directives of the relevant members of the provincial executive council. So that is the only provision currently in the Police Act and in the interim regulations that refers to the roles of provincial government, in particular, and secretariat, which from our perspective is also a gap that we need to address, and I think the board has reflected that. We need to define maybe more clearly the role not just of the provincial executive, but also of the provincial departments and secretariat and the national secretariat vis-a-vis CPS. I think we agree, therefore, with that recommendation of the board that we need to look at the specific provisions for the role of national and provincial secretariat. If I may, just very briefly go through the objects which are currently included in the Act, it speaks to why do we have basically community peace forums. It speaks to the need for establishing and maintaining a partnership between the community and the service, promoting communication between service and the community, promoting cooperation between the service and community in fulfilling the needs of the community regarding policing, improving the rendering of police services to the community at national, provincial, area and local levels, and we've replaced our service area, improving transparency in the service and accountability of the service to the community, promoting joint problem identification and problem solving by the service and the community. And I think the recommendations made by the board also reflect very clearly that they still function within these objectives, and that is what we're trying to achieve. Currently, the interim regulations is the only directive that applies to how we establish CPS and how CPS function, and that is the 2001 regulation that was interim in 2001, as I indicated, with the intention that the final regulations would be issued after the white paper. We agree that that should be reviewed. We have currently got two processes in place that I'm sure the Secretary will also speak to. We've got a policy process that already in the prior to the current Secretary and Minister, there was an initiative by the National Secretary to develop a community policing policy that also takes note of the establishment of community safe forums. And at the same time, as General Story indicated, we started the development of a community policing strategy. And the intention is very much that those two policy tools, or policy and strategic tools, would work together. The national chairpersons have participated in the development of both the policy and the strategy to make sure that those processes are aligned. And the intention is that once those projects are finalized, we will be able to establish community safety forums and CPS structures, and they would be able to cooperate, work together toward community safety. And I think, that is essentially we need to look at the specific clauses in the Act and the what that needs to be updated in line with some of the recommendations that comes out of the community policing policy and strategy and also recommendations from the law.
Thank you. Acting Secretary, from your side.
Thank you, Jefferson. We are present here today precisely because we deem the community police forum a very important structure. And since I've been appointed to ACT, I've met formally with the CPF board and its leaders, or some of its leadership, for at least a minimum of 5 times to date. Informally, it's been more. That's how very seriously we take the community police forum. With regards to the public participation process public policy making process, I think as articulated by the community police forum, the input of the CPF is invaluable, and that is one of the reasons why the Secretariat has availed resources to conduct workshops that in which the CPF is playing a leadership role to discuss the white papers in particular that is currently being processed by the Secretariat. And I note the comment that maybe we gave the perception that we are just getting the input for rubber stamping.
But adding my responsibility as a public firm very seriously, and I take the efficient and effective use of government resources very seriously, and so I wouldn't be spending lots of government money on ensuring that the CPS participates in the public a public policy consultation process purely for a rubber stamping exercise. So in that regard, we will continue with engaging the CPS on the development of public policy. Likewise, with regards to location, the CPS is quite correct to say that ideally it should be located within the civilian secretariat, and the act must be rendered accordingly. We put it into the white paper for police. And once the white paper for police is adopted formally, then we will start to formalize the amendments of the SAP Act and the regulations. So indeed, that is something that is worked towards, and that is something that is being encouraged by our minister. With regards to the funding model, we have raised as a concern, because if our objective is to maximize public participation, then indeed we must ensure that it's effectively resourced. So from our side, in addition to the resources that's being given by SAPS, we've looked at how we can better formalize interim resourcing mechanisms until the legislation needs to be concluded, and then we need to start negotiations with National Treasury for the next NTF period that CPS is located within the civilian secretariat. Also, I think that earlier we had this discussion on the DBA Act, and so I really welcome the input by the CPS, because as I demonstrated in our earlier presentation, we simply do not have the capacity to reach every police station on the ground. And when I listened to the CPS input, I thought that, wow, there's an opportunity for even deeper collaboration, because at a actual level, we can ensure that this is appropriately regulated. But definitely, we will look into how we can draw on the human resource capacity that resides within the CDF to better assist us in exercising our oversight responsibilities.
Thank you very much, Acting Secretary. Members, over to you for questions, clarifications. As indicated, that this is the first step of this engagement. It's not the last. It's to get an understanding. I think the issues raised by SAPS as well as the Secretary is absolutely valuable for us to understand the issues, and then go to questions. We'll start from Honourable Ramadkhani's side.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you very much to the presentation by the National CPD Board. And of course, that is complemented by both the SAPS and the Secretary. You know, I just have a few questions. And the question comes, of course. The first thing, the issue that I want to ask, is this issue of location. And I noted both on the three talking about location. But in my head, I don't know what informs location. The debate about location. Is it purely frustrations, experienced frustrations, or frustration in relation to resources, or what informs it? Because I would see the operations, the policy, and the tool distance to be very close. I don't know what informs it. Maybe you will respond to it without me making a statement. Because earlier on I picked up frustration input, close to throwing your arms in the air and walking away if I paraphrase you. So if I take that analogy to the conclusion of the location, you want to walk away from SAPS because all of these problems. Now, I don't know whether that's a good or bad, but you will respond to it. So I just want to understand that. Because if we talk in resources, and the resources that you have mentioned, the lack of resources, because of the policy problem. The most resourced institution that files crime today and in the future is going to remain such. The connection between that structure that files crime and the infrastructure to support it is critical. So I just want to chair, sorry for this, but I just want to understand if it's frustration, but we'll leave it for the engagement to happen, but it sounds to me that frustration is what is creeping in. And I understand that, I understand the frustration and understand the police in uniform, sometimes how they think and how they act. They can see the irritations of us, so you want to walk away from this feeling of irritation and do something else. But may not be the right thing to do at this stage. The second one, question I wanted to just ask, perhaps is Janos told us this question, but Janos told us the issue about the CPF and resourcing and the stations issue. It's been a long issue and as old as we can remember. And there has been a general understanding and acceptance that there would be a resource provided in the close proximity in the station for CPS to function, because those are complementary for the police. Now, what has been the problem? What is actually the problem that actually is not happening? I mean, they mentioned the issue about resource, the transport, the traveling, and all other things. There's always been the issue that at some point, one would have thought that there was an understanding, there was acceptance that because it's an issue that is regulated in the Act, the modus operandi in terms of national instruction has to inform that. But why it is taking 21 years for us to get here to deal with the issue of the national commissioner competence to regulate? Because that gives instruction to everybody in the police as what functions happen. Why taking so long to get to that point? Now, I want to leave this because I think let me come to the last question, Chair, is this. Who interface between the board or the provincial board and the police management? Because I heard something, a juniorization or junior interface. Of course, Constable will deal with it, whether the senior leadership is busy in this. That gets to do with the buy-in in the problem and sharing of information around what has happened. And this one I want to be a little bit more clear. The sharing of information does not necessarily mean co-determination. It's two different stories there in terms of the police. It's about sharing information around what we need to do without necessarily being a management of the police, if you understand what I'm saying. So always be a line between that. So what is this who interface? Because that also could play into the very same thing of negativity. That we don't mean anything. That's why we must meet with a constable. It takes long for a constable to report to the general in terms of the protocol of the police. Otherwise, it defaults the people if they come direct. So that's a frustration. How do we address that particular issue to address this problem? Because there is definitely a gap there that one can identify. So, Chair, I want to pause there for a moment. I have a list of others, but others are policy processes that I think can be. But what is clear, as a party short, there's a realization from the management and from the board that there is an important thing that must work together, and strategy has been formulated, as I understand, is now in the process of being adopted or finalized by the. So that means there is a progress going forward. And I think the National Commissioner will deal with the issue that has always been in sore pain about the work, the regulations that deal with the protections. There's always been the issue about the protection, non-protection in the event of injury on duty. There was a draft regulation from TAGEC about this, how far that regulation come to. Because there's been an issue from the CPSAPs. What is it? Oh, yeah. No. There was a draft regulation that was in place some time back. But as I haven't heard it come from them. I'm just asking what is the progress around that particular aspect. Whether they are reserved or non-reserved, but there's issue about duty versus not duty.
Thank you, Honorable
Isvala.
Thank you, President. Honorable Ramasaga has covered quite a lot of ground. You know, where I'm coming from, Chair, the CPFs were primarily created with a view to assisting the police reduce crime in our communities, primarily because crime occurs in our communities. Our children, our brothers and sisters are involved in it. And we tend to know who is involved, you know, who kills cars, who sells drugs. And we basically serve as a source of intelligence to the police to execute their mandate. And I think it's the responsibility of every citizen to report crime. But, you know, there has been a culture that has developed in this country where there's a problem, you then create convoluted structures that are talking to a very, very simple problem that is national in nature and requires to be treated as such. It's a responsibility of every citizen, as I said, to contribute towards confighting. But then the creation of structures, protocols, then there's the money issue. We talk about a government that is growing by the day. If you look at the fiscal spend on governance, it's huge. And what I hear could culminate in a situation where we've got an extra mandate to take care of ourselves as citizens. Once we've got a recognized structure constitutionally that is supposed to execute our mandate in relation to crime. That poses a problem to me. What I would want to urge is, you know, we serve communities not because we're looking to benefit. We serve them because we want to. I think that should be the basis upon which we move. We are in it to enhance the quality of life for people. But once we have a view that there could be benefit, then that begins to defeat the very intended purpose of the exercise. Now, I would want us to talk to or try to influence a paradigm shift in terms of thinking as to what our role ought to be as members of society in relation to crime fighting. You talk about the Western Cape, which has an endemic drug problem. The drug dealers don't live in isolation from us. They live with us. Do police get a benefit of such intelligence from the neighbors? The drug dealer is a neighbor. It has been a problem of the Western Cape from time immemorial. It still is a problem today. Problem of terrorism, my child is a gangster. It's your child. Now, whose responsibility is to identify a child as a gangster? The police. It is your job as a member of society to say to the police, I've got a problem, my child has gotten involved in some strange activity. And I need your help, you have counselors, you have this. You know, Che, my point of departure is, I appreciate the fact that, you know, we all want to play a role. But can we begin to be conscientious, driven, rather than incentive driven? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I'm very concerned about the tenor of the inputs given.
made a list of phrases used such as government ambivalence and superficial or cosmetic work by the policy unit, that the CPS gained little or no new leverage and felt conned. There seems to be a blaming the previous secretary for police who is not here to defend herself. There are scathing comments about the secretariat that I only spoke to you in an attempt to acquire political buy-in, and that the SATCOP management display sheer ignorance. And it goes on into recommendations which include things like, and I don't know what it means, I'd like an explanation, vigorous profiling of the Ministry of Police. I don't know what that means. And there are instructions given. SAPS must budget for all CPF programs. The secretary must lead a process to ensure payments of stipends. Must is used over and over again as there are instructions given to the SAPS. And then finally, the portfolio committee must support that these documents be endorsed and that instructions be given to the SAPS and given in the criteria. So it comes across, whether intentionally or not, I cannot say, in this documentation as a bid to take over various entities, the neighborhood watches, an education mandate, but the Act says that the role of the CPF is to establish and maintain a partnership between the community and SAPS and improve the rendering of the police services. It doesn't say that the CPF must take over or undertake SAPS activities. It does not seem, it doesn't imply that the CPF are a level of the SAPS or are there to take over the job of the reservists in fighting crime. It says very clearly in 23.2 that members of community police or the boards shall render their services on a voluntary basis and have no claim to compensation for services rendered, as it is with reservists who go out and fight crime when they're on duty, and they do it as a duty, a volunteer service to the community. Now, there's intense anger in these documents. So that tells me you're wanting something you're not getting. You want the legislation changed, it says here, you want the entire process changed, you're looking for a funding model to fight crime, you want to establish street and village committees and neighborhood watches accountable to you. That's not in the legislation. Neither is there reference to patrolling handled by reserves and SAPS members, of course. So I fear there may be a blurring of lines, which again speaks to what we were discussing earlier, and perhaps the question must be to the SAPS then, about policy. Would it clearly define, again, the roles? I mean, they seem pretty clear to me in the legislation, but maybe flesh it out and see what can and cannot be done in terms of the CPS and their status and role within the SAPS as a volunteer entity, and a means to disseminate information to communities and to gather information from communities and bring them back to the SAPS. So I think there's been a massive blurring of lines, and I would like to know what the SAPS is going to do to refocus those lines, and how they're going to deal with this intense anger that we're seeing here from the gentleman across the table.
Thank you, Honourable, from your side. Nothing, Honourable Malabati.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is on the location of the CPF. In your view, do you think, what do you think is right? Is it better if they are located in the police stations or outside the police stations? Why I'm asking this is I've seen a CPF located in a police station where the chairperson ended up colluding with all the wrongdoers in the police station until to a stage where he was arrested. So in your view, is it, where must it be located? My second one is on the patrollers. Are they being properly screened? Why I'm asking this, I've seen known criminals who are patrollers. So I'm asking myself, are they being properly screened? My third question is, You made mention of one something there when we were speaking of gathering of information for other reasons. Can you elaborate on that? Yes, sir.
About the Honorable Market.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to clarify one or two things. It was said that the National Commissioner assumes some powers in relation to regulations that are supposed to be done by the Minister. I didn't understand which powers might those be. And under recommendations, I think Honorable Colapanet already asked that vigorous profiling of the Ministry of Police and Civilian Secretariat of Police. I just want to understand what is this vigorous profiling. And maybe if I could be educated on General Sithole said something about it, where some sections, I don't know whether some sections of the Act falls under the National Commissioner, and he said the operational part of it, and something else falls under the Civilian Secretariat. I just want to understand what does that mean? Is it that policy is with Civilian Secretariat and operations is? Just want to clarify myself on that one. Thank you, Chairperson.
From my side. Slide 2. I don't believe it. You are saying that there's only 3 CDFs in the country that haven't been established and is not functioning. Now, oversight work, we visit police stations, and they say, well, CPF hasn't had a meeting since April last year, or the chair hasn't been established. Just in terms of our limited data and oversight, I don't think we can take slide 2 as correct. Because what do you understand under functioning? Functioning means there's annual meetings, there's regular interactions. What about all the dysfunctional ones? If I can get from the various provincial chairs, just an indication, how many are dysfunctional? Because I can't, if you say this to Parliament and to the Portfolio Committee on Police, this is the status quo now, today. I'm prepared to take a bet that this is not correct. So I want every province to indicate how many community police forms is not functional, that we can get the true picture, not the superficial. Can we get the correct picture? Okay, that's the questions. Let's start with the delegation, and then we'll give General Sithole and the Secretary an opportunity. Over to the CPF.
Sir, thanks. As part of saying, Chair, I'm not alone with the delegation, so we will assist each other in responding to questions. The last one that the Chairperson asked, we agree on it, that cannot be correct. See, what we mean, Chair, is that there was initiative of starting the CPF. Somewhere it went along on the line and fell down. Like, you go to the Northern Cape, we are saying 91 CPFs are established. But 6 of them really are non-functional in the Northern Cape.
You see, then you must withdraw slide 2 and in next week or so give us the correct information. Because you can't come to Parliament and say everything is correct. And we know, I mean, the MPs are doing the constituency work. We must report our respective parties, so we know what's going on. So you must please, you know, correct us and give us the correct information. Right, let's go to the other questions.
Chair, okay. I'll give over to my colleagues to respond to this. Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, the thing is what we need to agree to is the criteria of functionality. Maybe we need to debate
that you are presently utilizing its functionality and effectiveness. CPFs are functional, but they are not effective according to the criteria and the tool that we have developed ourselves. And Jefferson, under the lack of resources at the board, does not allow us to go to a station and put our finger on the functionality side or effectiveness of CPFs within the station. We rely on information given at this all at national level. That's the source of and the process of information that we're using. And if provinces are given this information and we expect feedback from them and they give us that, that's the information we believe is reliable and is correct. So what the chairperson is saying now is we should not only rely on it, but just go in and verify as well, which I think we'll be looking to. Thank you. Chairman, let me go on further to say the issue of SS per request, the issue of English, the issue of English and the wording of some of these things, I think are just as we have put them across. And as I stand where I am, Jefferson, I now almost 20 years volunteering my services in the CPF. Most of us, yes, we have 20 years volunteering without any cent coming to us. And you can imagine having to go down risking our lives on behalf of this country and not even recognized or appreciated. It frustrates, and for you to be expected to bask as though you're next to a beach and come with nice words and present, it's just how we feel. It is anger so to be interpreted, because we cannot afford to see how crime has been used as a political tool. If the police can, in some cases, under resource, cannot perform their functions, even with the intelligence provided by their communities. And if, for argument's sake, you find at station level a CPF must account or, you know, be assisted by a constable who doesn't have decision making powers, it adds insult to injury. And that's where it comes from, Chairperson. If CPF at station level are appreciated by management of such, they should at least have given CPF a commissioned officer who can take decisions. So we don't experience that, and that's where the issue of functionality comes into play. Because for lack of support from member station level, which I believe top management has to address at times, renders the CPF dysfunctional. Because within meetings, members has to contend with two vehicles, which has to cover, you know, a radius of 50 kilos for collecting 15 members of the CPF. And that makes it very difficult, if not impossible, for CPS to be very effective and functional. That's the situation that we are faced with. And separate in that regard, also these members are heading with a van, putting the back of a van, volunteering their services, trying to serve their country, to go to meetings. This is the situation that we are faced with as CPS. And separate, I don't see a situation where, for argument's sake, if a report is compiled, we need to use words that are acceptable to some and acceptable to some. But the truth of the matter is, that's what we are experiencing as members of the CPS. How many members of the CPS are killed on a daily basis? Those statistics are not made mention of. They are not made mention of, but you find every day police are killed. The successes and the inputs by the CPS, the intelligence, the arrests by the CPS, it's not documented, said no way. No way is it mentioned. The efforts of CPF members, Jefferson, is not mentioned. And we are not here with a control with a happy hand. What we are saying is legislation provides for us as members to get the necessary support from government. That we are entitled to be asking for that. That's what we are saying. For the 20 years that I have been in the CPS, where I am, I don't remember getting any support in terms of a project to a CPF. In a station. We are just there to play a supporting role for those who are leading projects, and we are just, by the way, brought in. And just as we have to realize, in terms of the question that was asked in terms of our location, it's not easy for you to be expected to play oversight. Oversight is misconstrued. For saying
this policeman has not fulfilled his duties when he was summoned to attend to a complaint. That's an oversight that we have made. And when you are there ready to say you are not doing your work, how do you expect that very person to give you support, to look after you? Chancellor, the transformation agenda is a program of this government, a continuous program. The purpose of location within stations is for purposes that we believe is for transformation purposes. For having those chairs in the stations, we believe it's part of the transformation agenda. So that such members must start to realize that in terms of the community policing strategy as put across by the general, the style of policing, which has not been implemented as yet since 1994, if it is so, for reasons made mention by the general, makes it difficult for us as communities or the police to play an effective role within CPS. That community smart policing must become the order of the day, not reactionary policing as it has been. So the role of the police now, prior 94, has totally changed, and it has not sufficiently happened at the level of where we are as stations. On the issue of the provinces, Chairperson, coordination of the structures at station level needs an independent structure. We should be placed in the secretariat to play the necessary oversight and give the necessary support to the CPS. Now the CPS, we owe our mercy to the existing management of such. And if they do want to assist with the world, but in most cases they don't have according to what we are told in terms of resources. So even at the level of the board at national, the coordination of the activities of the CPS in the province must be coordinated at some way. They can't exist. You can't expect CPS at national level to accumulate their frustrations and give them to such members themselves. There are such members who are frustrating them. So they need to have their own structure, which they need to account to.
Sorry for interrupting. We're going to take a 10-minute tea break and then we'll come back and we'll continue with your responses as well as other questions. Thank you. 10 minutes. Thank you, members.
But if you can, then, yeah. If there's time, if it means before I get that, we'll let you have your glasses. Okay. Sorry? She's on our left front side of the ship. So, yeah, hold on.
Thank you.
Okay, you could just eat it and do the run.
Thank you.
I'm just trying to wrap up my thesis.
Oh, really?
So, my mom's thesis. So, yeah, I'm going to do it.
Oh,
right. Oh, I'm like seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Okay. What did you
linguistics.
Okay.
Kind of. I finished my thesis last year, but I'll be graduating in June.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Members. 1 minute. Maybe just in case that those have joined us late in terms of our program today, this morning we dealt with the DVA report. We're currently dealing with item 3 in terms of a presentation by the National Police Board, as well as SAPS and the Secretariat. And the last item today will be the issue of vetting of IPET and the Secretariat that we dealt with last week. So we will continue with item 3 in item 2. And over to the chairperson. He's busy responding to the questions of the honourable members. We'll continue with that. There's also the responses by General Sitole and his team, as well as the acting secretary. Thank you. So you can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, if I may proceed from where I left off, on the issue of the vigorous profiling of the ministry and the secretariat. Chairperson, the secretariat, as General Kunar has rightly indicated, only arrived late. It was only established late that the secretary became a fully fledged department. But before that, it was an unknown entity. And hence, most of the issues are lagging behind. That I think secretariat, if by then what it is could have been dealt with, we couldn't have been here. On the issue of the profiling, said Chairperson, the Secretariat has a very important role to play. One of those is to make itself known to the public. The public does not know the Secretariat's sufficiency as it should for it to be utilized to the benefit of the community or the role that it plays as an override body. With other ligaments of structure that are within it, like the IP, etc., that are playing oversight. So we feel sufficient, I think, canvassing and marketing of the Secretariat is very imperative, and not the Secretariat as a person. This should also go, Chairperson, to the Ministry. Chairperson, there are, as we have rightfully indicated, the issue of patrollers. The ETWP program as introduced by government is a very effective program that can be utilized at substructure level for EPWP patrollers programs, which I believe can be utilized for in upmarket areas for people who are car guards and all, you know, issues like those, at schools, guarding at schools, etc., etc. So we felt the ministry should come to the party in that regard. And the ministry in that regard is very underutilized, like other ministers who are utilizing the EPWP program. And we felt, we feel that as part of one of the funding programs that the ministry should gauge in the EPWP program. And hence, I think we want that to be profiled to the benefit of the community, because that can be a very effective way to get the buy-in of the community in fighting with incentives, without a burden on the fiscus, so to say. There was a profiling. Chairperson, if I may go further with recent, I think, responses with my colleagues here, I'm not going to deal with those. I'll give others also a chance to deal with those. And Chairperson, the issue of the both sides, there is a distorted understanding by a lot of people. When you talk of the CPS, they see you as the CCPS as statutory informers. We are not. But some such members want us to be seen as glorified informers. Information feeding is a patriotic duty of every South African. We have a role to play. We have a past which we need to arrest at all costs. And we need not drop our guard in that regard, that transformation. And that's the role that we are playing in terms of oversight. We are playing that role, Chairperson, and that oversight role says we need to set benchmarks with such members through which we'll be able to monitor their actions. Monitoring and evaluation instruments must be established. We have recommended it, Chairperson. That should be established of, as per, I think, recommendation by the Deputy National Commissioner of International Standards. We have developed those, and we are in the process of reinforcing those within the community strategy. So, Chairperson, that's our role, and I think the issue of our role as CPS needs to be unpacked further, and if needs be, we can do that, Chairperson, very comprehensive in the documents that we have prepared for the Minister. Chairperson, let me also hasten to say, the issue of funding model, the issue of the review of the interim regulations, we must not lose sight of the fact that this interim regulations has been there over 10 years. Many things have changed. And then we have become slaves to interim measures. That does not have any effect on the crime-fighting methods that are presently existing out there. So should we make ourselves hostages to those systems that are of an interim nature? That doesn't want to conform to the changing circumstances. The interim regulations are just that interim. And the Minister has commissioned the National Board Chairperson to develop, I think, the issue of the funding model, the issue of location, the issue of role. We have prepared those documents, Chairperson. They are comprehensive documents. And these documents, Chairperson, maybe if with the permission of the Secretary, we will, I think, leave copies thereof. I think that's fine. And the last but not least, Chairperson, we also want to acknowledge, Chairperson, the arrival of the Deputy National Commissioner after his appointment has unleashed and unlocked, so to say, the potential of the board in establishing a community policing strategy. Chairperson, we believe this is the solution to the crime situation in our country. And if, Chairperson, this strategy can be allowed, I'm happy to hear that, yes, the previous day, this strategy was presented to the National Commissioner.
because that was blocking. Over years, they did develop their strategy. Their strategy is an all-encompassing document, as per consultation by all stakeholders within the country. And their strategy takes all the shortcomings in terms of legislation and policy within government, brought them into one, and utilize crime fighting as one comprehensive machinery. If allowed, Chairperson, that document can be allowed to go to the minister and it gets a clean bill of health and implement it, so to say. I think just community policing will be very effective, and we will have, I think, a very effective policing machinery in the country. On that note, Chairperson, I want to say thank you. I don't think my colleagues have anything that they want to say. Thank you.
Members of the board, yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. And to the honorable members. Allow me to explain and emphasize, Vera's profiling only means rent positioning, only means marketing the ministry and marketing the secretariat so that the consumers of the two services, that of the Ministry of the Police as well as the civilian secretariat, are taken into consideration or are planted at the top of the minds of our people out there. Vigorous profiling might have been seriously misunderstood as checking for the fingerprints of the people. That is not what we meant. Yeah. Thank you very much for interacting with us. We also want to speak about the programs. That's really the fierce chair. The programs of crime prevention and crime combat. Some of those programs, we fund them ourselves from our own pockets, and we are proud to do that for our country, for leadership like yourselves in this house, working hand in glove with people like General Stoll and General Dinar and the rest of the people. We are not asking for our country to do something for us. We are here this morning volunteering to make sure that safety and security of children, of women, of people with disabilities are taken into consideration, particularly by some of us who are men here. Men must take responsibility and make sure that they protect their own kind, meaning those groupings that I've mentioned. We need to indicate to you that patrollers are screened. I'm not going to say in how they say that, and I'm just going to put it to you. Patrollers are screened in our communities. Yes, there are some gaps where people fall through those cracks, but when they're identified, it's very simple with some of us. The sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Whether you like God or you don't, the sun will continue to rise. So the principle here becomes the letter. When gas has come through, those individuals will be cleaned out of the system. In as much as when crime has been committed, to emphasize here, by members of our own organization, the community, by the way, we are not a CPF sitting here. When General Stoller joins us here, we are CPF. We are a community as we are sitting here. The CPF is when there's the PPAT. The PPAT is led by our brother and our general and our friend, General Stoller and General Mossad, as well as General Dinas. That's only when we have the CPF. There's this misnomer that we are the CPF. We are not the CPF. We are the community part of the partnership. We also want to talk about and address the fear, which is correct, that speaks about members of the community not revealing, not exposing criminals within our communities. By the way, some of those criminals are our younger brothers, our sisters, our cousins, our uncles. And me and you, Chair, sitting in this house, we know that sometimes people's names, community members' names, do get exposed by some of our partners in the uniform, creating once again what the chairman has spoken about, a glorified informer in a suit going into a police vehicle, going into a community police partnership meeting, where sometimes people know things, sometimes they tell us, and we pass that information to the relevant people, not for informing, but to make sure that there is a safe and a safe environment for one and all. But in most instances, you'll find that some of the bad or corrupt or for the want of a clean word, those police officers who are not in good standing expose people's names. So we're talking about the funding model here, not to bring that money into our pocket, but to make sure that the programs in the new community policing strategy are funded and the objectives as well as value for life, limb and investment that we are making, as well as what government is expecting, particularly your most important committee and that we look up to, realizes the objectives of making sure that there is a safe and a secure environment. Chair, I think we had a problem when we're talking about juniorization for all of us sitting in this room to understand. It touches us deeply and moves us greatly to sit in a meeting and when we are supposed to take a resolution, a lawful one and a legal resolution in a meeting. The constable who sits there can't make decisions, must go and talk to the general outside, and the general is not picking up phone. I'm showing you this picture so that you understand that it is not out of arrogance, it is not out of spite to our own partners, but it's important to understand that civilians take leadership of the community police partnership. I always say where I come from, I am not a police officer. I don't want to be involved in police matters and operationalization. This is all of us who are sitting here, that's where we move from. We don't want to be putting handcuffs on people. We are not experts in that area, and we don't want to be there. We are saying when it comes to community policing partnership issues, when we sit and take decisions, those police officers who are members of that board, that cluster board, that station level precinct, that community police sub-forum and committee have no choice but to comply with the resolutions that we take legally and lawfully in the meeting. That has to be recorded, that must be kept safe, that must be provided to yourselves when you come. And it is correct in conclusion. Not all the CPFs are functional throughout the whole country. In my for example, in my own province, I have 5 clusters that are dysfunctional, but we are even now with the AGM, the process has started. By end of October, you might be seeing someone else share. It is important that we should acknowledge where we make mistakes, that we do make mistakes, and it is correct to indicate to you that the turnover is very high. Tomorrow you are a member of the CPF, today you are a member of the CPF, tomorrow you are on the expanded public works program, you leave the CPF, you are going to be changing the schools or doing something else, and you don't want to be with the CPF anymore. The turnover is very high, and there are a number of challenges that we are dealing with here, that has to do with the challenges that we are facing one as an organization, as communities and the police. I just want to stop then. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. CPF is a liquid organization, as my colleague has just stipulated. You'll find someone elected today. The next few weeks, you'll find him out and then need to do a new AGM, a new election. Like, for instance, in KZN, I've got 3 CPFs that I need to go and resuscitate simply because people will find work somewhere else. That is a gap. In KwaZulu-Natal, we all know we've got a new organization called KZSSPA. So it's a competition that we face with. That simply means that CPF is losing its calm, simple of certain tendencies that are taking place within the structures and function. The Criminal Procedure Act, Section 37, stipulates that there is a function of citizen's arrest. So in terms of Section 45 of the Constitution, there is this perception that it is a privilege for everybody to do it every day. But to me, it's an as-and-when function, which happens when you see, as it says, if a police officer sees you or facing a criminal, he might call you to help. If you say no, he can hold you liable for defeating the end of justice and you spend three months or six months in imprisonment. Therefore, if you look at these privileges that have been provided through what I've just mentioned, it makes sense that people are now, there is now a proliferation of new structures that are coming into the society fighting crime because they see CPF. I remember in one of the gatherings I was with the ministry where people said they cannot talk with the organization that sees a woman getting raped and then from the police who might even say there's no vehicle. Thank you. I want to stop.
Another hand? So are you covered?
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I want to be short. If you look at our community policing strategy that has been developed, it says amongst other things, I think one of the focus areas there is to deal with a multidisciplinary approach. I'm responding to the question pertaining to whether is it our intention to accept or to take over the responsibilities of the reservists, the neighborhood watch and all this kind of stuff. We are saying, no, that's not the case. The case is to encourage a multidisciplinary approach. Of course, an honorable member said something about whether there is an element of frustration with regard to our ultimate location. But I want to believe that members have said a lot as to trying to put the case forward as to why we want to be located to the civilian target for police. I must indicate the honorable chairperson that indeed there are those frustrations, but actually we do not want more weight to put on those frustrations. Rather, we might regard that as some of the challenges that want us to see as having a partnership that will come up with workable solutions in order to meet what the South Africa is a free country to live in. And there's one of the documents that one once went through that seeks to tell us that, look, a partnership, Honorable Chair, we are on equal footing with the police. And if you look at the interim regulations, which is still, also some of its provisions are outdated in terms of what's currently being done, and hence that the review of SAIN's underway, it talks about the establishment of the CPFs being the responsibility of the South African Police Services. Yet you are also saying that the police should be accountable to the society and the community that it serves. If we are located within the subs and we are in the police stations, which is not the problem of now, but the argument is how are we going to be able to play our role of monitoring that of an oversight? Because now we are located within the very same institution where we need to get. In some of the cases, whenever we need, like this national border incident here, if we need to convene about our own meetings in terms of our schedule, I'm going to tell you the chairperson that we have to struggle, we have to beg, and others in other provinces, relations will not be good. And we have those police stations where your police station commanders, including your cluster commanders, and to some extent even your provincial commissioners, would not actually be in good terms with us as the members of the community policing program. And they will then make use of that to frustrate you because we have to rely on them for transportation and all those kinds of stuff. It is in that particular spirit that we are saying that once you are located to the civilian secretariat for police, this will actually make sure that we minimize these kinds of problems that you are facing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. I first of all want to thank the opportunity for being here, and I want to thank the honourable member for highlighting the equity of women. But luckily, the Western Cape is protected. I just need to speak to the presentation. When we made the presentation, it was 25 clusters, but since April, the Western Cape has been reduced to 16 clusters. So that means, in case we are being challenge for accuracy. I just need to highlight one thing that our commitment, because a lot of people misinterpreted our commitment, but I just want to say that Saturday we had our board meeting. This is just to say that our level of commitment is that I left my house at 2 to attend a meeting, and then we found our partners who might stay away without apology, but that doesn't stop us from serving our community. And I would also want to close by saying that it's a good thing to come of age in this platform, and thank you for lending your ears and also take our community's interests at heart. Thank you.
I first want to get General Sitora and the Secretary if there's any outstanding issues, and then we'll come to the members for final round. Yes, General?
Yes, thanks very much. I wanted to start by saying maybe if I'm doing my analysis, because this is a presentation by the CPF, I'm getting to a point where we say to the community, we had problems, but now we have solutions. Because for almost the majority of what we're raising, we say, now that we develop a community policing strategy, and the solutions are lying there. In actual fact, it would have been very easy for all of us if we had been presenting the strategy to the committee and say, yes, we had problems, these are the solutions, but maybe that future will come. Chairperson, I just want to then respond to a few questions that were raised by the honorable members. There was a question of the location debate. I wanted to start by saying, in terms of current legislation, starting with the Police Act, CPS are located with SAPS. And there has been no misinterpretation, there has been no problem with that particular location or with the National Commissioner exercising that particular function. But there is a role of the Secretariat in community policing. And SAPS has been open to a discussion with the Secretariat. We first want to indicate that there has been no problem with the location of the CPS. We as SAPS, and I also don't want to raise frustrations, because we have said, let us develop a strategy so that we become structured in our approach. So, this is the standpoint, but if Secretariat wishes that CPS should be located to their side, we are also not necessarily disputing that, but what we want to still advance is that then the tool will be located with Secretariat, but community policy will still be remaining with SAPS, because that is a constitutional operational mandate. So I think we have not debated SAPS in terms of that. Then I want to respond to the question regarding the resourcing of community policy. And I wanted to start by explaining it very clearly. SAPS, we are resourcing community policing initiatives, programs, and projects. But we do not want that to be confused with CPS, that's the tool. We are funding the community policing initiatives, and we are funding them through crime prevention. And that function is located within visible policing. One of the reasons why we have put emphasis on the development of the strategy, we wanted to create a platform that will ensure that for each and every funding that we avail for community policing activities, that platform secures the immediate and automatic involvement of community policing role players and of all structures. So, let me then say to this part, we haven't stopped funding community policing initiatives. And I also then want to explain it in terms of the crime combating structures. Maybe there is also a bit must come here to the committee to say, all our community activities are informed by the crime combating processes. And in terms of the crime combating processes, we've got structures from national, which is the National Crime Combating Forum, Provincial Crime Combating Forum, right up to Station Crime Combating Forum. There we do what we call crime pattern analysis. And then we do root cause analysis of certain kinds, and we identify hotspots. Then we direct all initiatives, including community policing, to the same problem, so that we all fight one enemy. We fight it on the same spot. Now, then we say to community policing, if there's any project that you are planning, here is the problem. And let us all focus on that particular problem. But I also want to be upfront to say, any initiatives are not talking to what has been identified as a problem, we are a bit reluctant to fund it, because that will amount to less expense. but there's enough activities and information that is brought to the attention of community policing so that we focus them. We've also directed crime intelligence to develop what we call community policing-based intelligence products so that they know what is the intelligence at hand, what do we need to do to fight crime collectively. That's the point I wanted to make. And there's national discussions that are issued from the National Crime Combating Forum. Then there was a question regarding the draft regulations. I think we have interim regulations, Tessa, on the side of community policy. We had draft regulations on the side of the reservists. And when we're also listening to the discussion, the question was going more on the side of the reservists, that is draft regulations. But the interim regulations, they were promulgated from the ministry, and they are actually still there. And up to this far, we also did not have much problems with the compliance with those particular regulations because we link them to the key legislation, which is the Police Act. And obviously, the Police Act at the present moment is undergoing a review, which will also impact on the regulations. Then there was a protocol question that also talks to the engagement of community policing structures. Maybe there's a little bit of a challenge that is not coming forth, and I think I must be very open to put it forth. Secondly, at the current moment in terms of current legislation, there's three structures of community policing that are recognized by legislation. The first one is a local community policing forum. The second one is a cluster that is community policing forum, which previously in terms of the act is the area board. The last one is the provincial board. Now, what we have now here is a national community police board. Is not provided for yet in the current legislation. I think I must just put that because that has been a point of discussion. And now our protocols are not yet aligned to the National Community Police Board. The fact being that none of the current legislation talks to it. And earlier on, when I was also talking to a need maybe to look at legislation, it could be for us then to say, whatever I'm going to bring in now, which is not prior to in the current legislation, and there's a new point, might need to look at the legislation. But all provincial commissioners, they are responsible to service or engage with the board at the provincial board level. And then we've got the deputy provincial commissioners for operations or for visible policy. They are assigned with the responsibility to engage and see to it that provincial boards are supported. And our engagement from the Office of the National Commissioner facilitated to my office to make sure that those particular deputies, they interact with the boards and they take responsibility. But I've also personally indicated to all the chairpersons that as and when we need and if there's problems in any province which relate to that, it would be indicated and we'll take it up to visible policing and we address that. I don't want to say that those problems do not exist, but as and when they do, we address them together. And it's one of the areas that we've put in the new community policing strategy so that we've got platforms to continuously address them. But we did have to iron out the issue of the national board, which is currently part of the functions that are assigned by the current legislation to the national commissioner does not include the national board. And And I must also talk a little bit very open about it to say, if say for instance we embark on activities or that involve the national board, and then we record it as such, as we are funding activities of the national board, Treasury is going to pick it up, and then we cannot account for it. So that is why we are just putting emphasis to say, yes, if there's anything that we must do or we want to do, let's first look at the legislations of the country and that make sure that they are not violated. If there's any other thing that we need to advance, let's look at those legislations and come up with those particular recommendations. But at the present moment, Chairperson, political board chairpersons are interacting with me at national, and I and then with the national commissioner, and visible policy is assigned to take that particular function. We've noted that there's constables who treat members of the community policing in a particular manner. We do not condone that. It's unacceptable. We'll still continue to monitor it and make sure that it doesn't happen. And station commanders are responsible to sit in the CPF meetings at local level. Cluster commanders at the cluster board and deputy provincial commissioners of visible policy at the provincial one. I think I had an example which I think CBET would confirm. When I was still a provincial commissioner, I was personally sitting with the board, was a board. And I was saying to them, let's talk about our implementation. But then Chairperson, for on this one, let me stop here. Then there was a question by honorable member relating to how our efforts are going to deal with the anger of the community policing chapters. Chairperson, I'm not sure whether from our side we'll still see it as anger directed to subs, or if it's anger, and or maybe it's something that they want to express to the portfolio committee, and emphasizing the seriousness. But everything that has been voiced out here has been confronted before, and we said, let us provide solutions, let's factor everything into the strategy, let's present the strategy in terms of all the protocols, and then after we presented that, let us then go and implement. If I'm a little bit that Chairperson to also hear coming from them that one, they've been involved in the strategy, and that two, they support the strategy, and that we also all confirm that the National Commissioner is the domain of the strategy currently, in terms of current legislation, has actually okayed the process of making it better. Not very long, the strategy will then be back to the portfolio committee, but through the right protocol, the endorsement of both the National Commissioner and the Minister. So I think we can do. But community policy is an operational matter, and it's a policing matter, and it must comply with basic policing principles. I think that's where we stand. And then going further, Chairperson, the location of CDF inside or outside the police station. Because community policy is developmental, the ideal situation that we've been looking at was for CDF to have a little bit of a semi-independent capacity to function so that they do interact with us. If we do have a conducive accommodation within the police station where there will be no tampering between CPF and the police station, we could provide with the police station, but it would have been good if we keep the community outside the police station for one reason. First reason, there's many other things that we're dealing with at the police station where not all of us can access the same information. But two, We also have got instances where police stations are getting attacked. And the CDS are not operationally ready to react, but we do. So, presently, we are starting from a particular point, right, a point of departure. So, the current arrangements, they are more or less interim. Where feasible, we accommodate them within the police station. But the ideal situation is when they're out of the police station. And the screening of patrollers, we have a neighborhood watch national instruction, which actually governs community patrol. And one of the instructions is that there should be an ongoing exercise of screening everyone who gets involved. What the honorable member has raised is giving us the homework to go and check, work on it, and make sure that all those who patrol, they actually go onto that particular constant screen, because we can screen one now, maybe 6 months down the line, this person is committed, come somewhere else, and if the screening is routine, we are also going to pick it up. So we're going to work on that particular honorable member. But the moment we pick them up, then we take them out. The other thing I just wanted to indicate in terms of that neighborhood watch national vaccine, communities do not patrol alone. Or there would always be a police person with a group of community patrollers, so that particular police person takes the responsibility. Then there was a question regarding the policy development, the operation part, as well as the role of the Secretariat, raised by the Honorable Member. I think firstly, the Secretariat is a policy development level, and perhaps is an operational level. Now, the operationalization of legislation is our responsibility, the SAS, the best with the National Commission. Now, the development of any strategy that operationalizes any legislation, that's a function of the National Commission. But the responsibility to develop strategic policies is addressed with Secretariat, except operational policies, because operational policies are also developed by the National Commission. But here, if we're talking about community policing, is at an operational level. And in terms of current legislation, it's still the responsibility of the National Commission. That is why, if the tool has to be located somewhere else, we must just also discuss how we're going to keep the two complementing each other, because the operationalization of community policies are still remaining with trucks. I think then, Captain, maybe for me then to conclude so that I'm not long.
To conclude, I want to end the section at 12 o'clock, so that includes further questions as well.
Less than 1 minute, Captain. All the solutions in terms of everything that we've raised here, they are lying in the strategy. And if we can present the strategy at the end, then everything will be better. Thank you.
Acting Secretary?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's important that we make the distinction between community policing and the community police forum. I also think that the location of the debate has to be informed by the contextualization of nature of the CPS, and that is why there seems to be flat incongruence in the perspective of SAS, the perspective of the CPS, and the perspective of the Civilian Secretariat. Now, the objectives of the Civilian Secretariat Act in Section 5, it states that we should, amongst others, liaise and communicate with stakeholders. We must implement a partnership strategy to mobilize role players and stakeholders to strengthen the service delivery of SAS. And since we must provide guidance to the community police wardens and associated structures and facilitate their proper functioning. So, to give expression to the Act, there are three PORC programs. One is the M&E unit, which is now currently being led by Luanda, and then the Policy Legislation Program and the Partnership Program. And the core purpose of the Partnership Program is to encourage civic participation in the environment of safety. And so that is why the White Paper on Police makes a clear distinction between the operational work of police, as mentioned by General Satori, and the role of oversight entities. And so, therefore, we deem it appropriate. We must formally separate SAPS so that, and the oversight entity so that it can perform its function objectively. And that is the reason why we strongly feel that the CPF should be located in the Civilian Secretariat of Police. Then with regards to the profiling of the Minister and the Secretariat, do we agree with the CPF? Because if we want increased community participation, then it's very important that the public is aware of the Solicitor Secretariat and the role of the Civilian Secretariat. And so that's why we've been having these provincial visits. We did four between October and November, and we continue the provincial visits roll out program now in January. And we've also increased the number of public participation programs of the Minister. And we use those public participation programs to make the Secretariat more visible. I think there was a time when we were almost having an activity every second week, if not every week. So we definitely support the idea that we must profile the Secretariat. The only maybe area for debate is the methodology of profiling, because there has been commentary from some that we must have a big poster in every police station, and I'm of the view that the profiling of the civilian secretariat is most effective through work as opposed to adverts and media statements and posters. If we do work on ground, then people will become more conscious of our presence and our role. Then in respect of the plethora of structures, we are using the white paper processes to discuss the issues of what is the composition of the CPS and who is responsible for facilitating that it be set up, what is the composition of the community safety forum, who is responsible for it being set up, what is the role of provinces, what is the role of SAPS, what is the role of civilian secretariat. So we're using this engagement now. It's captured in the two white papers, but through the public consultation process, we're hearing other people's views, and then thereafter we'll consolidate the views and then formally table it. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. Members, unfortunately, our time is up. We must thank the three delegations for their input. We appreciate also the work that's done by the CPF in the provincial capacity. We understand that in terms of the national competency, they actually, you know, today, common law institution, if I listen to General Sithole. But we appreciate the work that's been done by members. You are actually contributing to make South Africa safe, and we appreciate your work. We will, of course, during the processing of the white paper as well as the other legislation in this year, also have further interactions with you, so thank you very much. We also study your documents. Thank you also to SAPS for the input and also to the Secretariat. We'll take a 2-minute break and then we'll go forward with item 3, the vetting issue. Thank you. Right, thank you, Kevin. Maybe ask for iPad to with iPad here and sit. With the issue of vetting of the IPIT management as well as the secretariat. Honourable members will remember that we had a meeting last week with the State Security Agency. Certain issues came to the fore, and we thought it was important to invite both the IPIT and the secretariat to give us a briefing on this issue. Maybe just as a background, just to give the members an indication of where we're coming from, and maybe then we'll ask the acting ED as well as the acting secretary to interview the delegations. In terms of the report of the Portfolio Committee on Police that was tabled in Parliament, we said this following with regard to vetting in the case of IPIT. I quote, the committee asked whether the senior management structure SMS of IPIT are vetted and have valid security clearance certificates. The IPIT stated that the entire SMS has submitted their completed documents to the State Security Agency for processing. The acting executive director has a valid security clearance certificate since 1997. The IPIT committed themselves to ensure that its SMS has the required security clearance. In terms of the report of the civilian secretariat, and I quote, vetting, the committee asked the CSP whether personnel, especially in the senior management structure, are vetted and has valid security clearance certificates. The CSP responded that the CSP personnel are not vetted. This has implications on the functionality of the CSP. For example, the draft of the white paper on safety and security was contracted to an outside service provider due to security concerns in addition to capacity constraints. The committee raised serious concerns about this and flagged it as a key recommendation. The committee did the following recommendation on page 14 of our report. The committee recommends that all staff should be vetted as a matter of urgency, especially the SMEs. The committee resolved that it will invite the deeds of the State Security Agency to further discuss the prioritization of security clearances for the CSP personnel. Now, we had that briefing last week, and I think there are certain issues arising from that presentation that we have to take up, and hopefully it will also be dealt with by the two acting accounting officers when they do their presentations. I think in the case of IBIT, what was concerning to us, that there is a long list of current officials who haven't submitted their certificates to the State Security Agency. And we as committee feel that it should be a fix. We also raised the issue of the relationship manager from State Security of IPIT. I didn't think we got clear answers from State Security on the status and functionality of that, but maybe the acting executive director can also deal with that. Because it's imperative from the committee's perspective that all SMS and investigative staff, as well as, of course, supply chain, must be vetted accordingly, because they must investigate SAPs. There must be a clear blue water between SAPs and IPIT. I don't want to refer to other issues that is also in the current public domain, but it's critical. There must be assurance that investigated and the SMS group from IPIT is thoroughly vetted, and there is no question about the appropriateness to do those investigations, because the public must have the assurance. If they, you know, submit a complaint to HIPAA to investigate. They must have the assurance that that issue will be dealt with confidentially and there is no links. I mean, there's recently been a lot of former SAPS people appointed as provincial managers and others. Also, it's imperative that there must be proper vetting be done. So that is why we must get an update from the executive director on where we are. In terms of the secretariat, I think the acting secretary raised sharply the issue of the committee that they had submitted in December, I think the necessary documentation, and there was problems of getting the necessary feedback from SSA. SSA, of course, their version last week said no, you know, they can't get meetings and only two members of the secretariat submit those documentation. So I think it's important for us to get a clear indication of what is exactly the situation, because at the end of the day, the outcome of this meeting is one, we need an assurance that there is progress. I think the acting secretary indicated to us last year that I think in previous years, the vetting wasn't even done, you know, before she came to the institution. So we welcome the fact that she is dealing with it head on. But we need to have assurances that both these oversight institutions are effectively run by people are vetted. So let us go. We'll first give an opportunity to IPET to do their presentation, then to the acting secretary, and then we'll give an opportunity to members to ask questions. Is there Honorable Ramadkane?
No, Chair. No, I agree. But I was just wondering whether the process of presentation of both the institutions should not be short-circuited. We have, in a way, received a presentation in a meeting with the State Security Agency. There were questions, direct questions that in relation to both that we wanted to understand. That is what you've said. So the presentation should, I'm trying to say, maybe we should not hear the same thing that has been presented by we want to know in the bottleneck problem. What is it that, why is it not happening? That's really the key question that the two agencies should get to. They should zoom into it rather than to taking us in a long presentation that does not answer the question.
We know the legislative framework, we know the act, we know the framework, we know the processes, but for us it's quite important why is there delays, why is there no follow-ups, all those issues. I mean, that's a critical issue. Over to the executive director, acting executive director, Mr. Khamenei.
Thanks, Chairperson and honorable members, and good day to all of yourselves. Let me start by introducing the team that I'm with and apologize for what happened this morning because we're having the 10 o'clock time as per the agenda. I'm Israel Khamenei, acting ED, and I'm joined by Nomfanelo Baku, Director of Legal Services. Then we have Luanda Xiaohate, DG Vetting. We have just established the vetting unit starting from the 1st of April this year, this special year. We do have the DG Vetting and two ESD Vetting. We have Ndatela Gnishi, the Deputy Director of Security Services, and Ndatela Mukiri, who is the acting DG PLO for the department. Without wasting any time, Chairperson, and fortunately I've went through the PMG report as per the presentation by Mr. Dodo from SSA, who is our relationship manager for the IPIT, and we have taken note of the concerns which were raised by the portfolio committee, and we have tried as a department to try and address some of those particular issues. Without wasting any time, I'm going to skip the introduction there, then I will also skip the background. I will also skip the risks, and I will skip also the legislative mandate, as the chairperson has already alluded to the fact that they are aware with regards to the IP mandate, and I will go straight into the vetting current status of the IP management. In process there, we've got the 33 members, SNS members within the department, 15 of those of the members' applications are in process, and 9 valid clearances as opposed to the 12 that was presented by SSA. We have 8 who didn't submit, and we have 1 who reapplied. In the process of reapplying, an agreement was reached with SSA to fast-track these applications as they are currently with SSA in respect of the 15th, and that one of the reapplications not submitted. The respective managers were issued with the Z2 force and were instructed to submit. Then they were issued with the Z2 force on the 21st, if I'm not wrong, speaking under corrections, and they were given a return date of the 29th of May 2015, which is this Friday, to submit those applications. An arrangement was made with SSA to receive the applications on the 2nd of June 2015, and in the interim, the identified managers have signed the secrecy clause. But having said that, all those who were abstaining in respect of the 8, these are the new appointments which were made during 1st of October last year, and April and March this year. So even before their appointments, all of them, they were pre-screened, and they do have the pre-screening certificate from SSA. So there is a difference between a pre-screening and a vetting or a security clearance from SSA. We are doing the pre-screening before employment since the inception of the IP Act. We don't take anyone into the system. We don't appoint anyone as and when that person, he or she is not suitable or has not passed that particular pre-screening by the SSA. So that's what we are doing, and we have never failed since the 1st of April 2012 as the department. And there's the current status in respect of those who have submitted, and the expiry dates of those applications, Standard Bright. Then we got the CFO, then Mr. Kuba, Morema, Leholo, Musi, Tukela, Mbaho, then Kamanyane there. I've noticed with concern that I was labeled as the person who didn't submit, who didn't have a security clearance. And my clearance there expired 31st of May 2020. And just like I indicated in this committee, as when I appeared here, I went through 1, 2, 3, I had 3 clearances. The first one had been from 1999, the second one from 2009, the third one is this one that I'm having now, expired in 2020. So that was really a concern for myself in respect of the report that was presented at SSA, because I have admitted I readmitted my Z2 for February last year, and my clearance was expired in September last year. Then I resubmitted the Z2 for during February. They did the process, and the polygraph test was done during June last year. That's when it was finalized. If the committee wants a copy of that particular clearance for myself, we'll be able to provide that chairperson. So these are the list of most of the people who have submitted in green there, and their applications, they are still with SSA. To look at Mr. Lamini, Moses Zakele, since it's submitted on the 11th of January 2010, up until today, and this polygraph test was finalized long time ago, that's why we haven't received this outcome with regards to the security clearance. We don't know, but there is an undertaking by SSA after their presentation and after our engagement that they will prioritize this with the receive the outcome, if I'm not wrong, within 4 weeks. Of all these members who are outstanding, including on the top of the list there is Nelly Fianda, the head of corporate services, where she submitted during 2012, immediately after her appointment. But up until today, we are still waiting. Others is 2015 and 2013. Then the last portion there is the, okay, only that there's a so-called reapplied. And even himself, they are busy with it. It was submitted to the SSC 2014, March 04. Then all these people have only the last columns there are all the newly appointed SNS members started from last year, October, and even this financial year. So they were issued to do those ZTO first, and they will submit them by the 29th of May. But as indicated, that they were pre-screened by SSA before the appointments. And in their personal files, we do have those particular pre-screening certificates as the department. Okay, I'll hand over to our head of vetting to deal with the SNN, which will address the issue in respect of the way forward from now onwards. That is over to you, madam.
Good morning to everyone. Good morning, Chair. My name is Marcel Hatsi. I'm the new Deputy Director for Getting. What has since happened upon my appointment and appointment of the two ASDs is that we have started liaising with SSA to advise the IPAD of the requirement of establishing a VFU, that is a Vetting Fieldwork Unit, and to distribute a draft memorandum of understanding for comments and inputs. And we did receive the MOU, and the whole process was completed on the 12th of May 2015. The IPAD will then provide its comments and inputs, and the due date for such on the MOU is the 29th of May 2015. The SSA will then peruse and consider all the comments and the input made by the IPAD to the draft MOU. The SSA will then send the consolidated MOU to IPAD for approval and signatures, and it will be forwarded and signed. The signed MOU will be forwarded to SSA for reciprocal approval and signature. And the date that, or the time frame we set is in June. The other issue is the procurement of required resources, including the acquisition of systems to conduct pre-employment screening. We are busy engaging with CIRA in regards to benchmarking, and this is an ongoing process. The training of the VFU personnel will be conducted by SSA within a year of signing the MOU. And this is because the personnel that we recruited, including myself, we are from the SAPS vetting unit, and SSA does not necessarily recognize the training. Then we have the installation and training on the security vetting information system, that is the SVIS, that would be determined by SSA. And then prioritization of vetting investigations, IPAD, it is in process. And the commencement of the vetting investigations by the VFU will start within 6 months. And then we also have a yearly scheduled monthly meetings with SSA. And the purpose of these meetings are to follow up on application processes and status of all clearances. And this will be included in the MOU. I think I'm done with the action plan that we plan to implement. Thank you. I'll hand over to the acting ED to conclude on the matter.
Chairperson, for the sake of time, I don't think we'll go through the pre-employment screening as well as the control sheet, because I think the committee was just interested on current status as far as the vetting of the department is concerned. Thanks, Chairperson. But let me just correct one thing before I'm accused of lying to Parliament. It's only Mr. Glenn Engers there on the last column. In respect of those who did not submit, Mr. Engers apparently submitted his applications, the Z2, for several times, but SSA and even head office, we don't have the records as far as that information is concerned, but we have requested him to resubmit once more with that particular date, and he will also give us the documentation on Friday. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Khamayana, for your very comprehensive action plan and response to the committee's request. We will ask now the acting secretary for their presentation, and then we'll go to questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The person that is responsible for security and investigation, Mr. Mashabini, is the chief director for corporate services, and he is not here today because he's writing exams. So I'll speak alone on behalf of the secretariat. And then I'll skip all of that aside and just speak to the last one, because the preceding one just outlines the powers and functions of the secretariat and the obligation of SSA to ensure that we are appropriately vetted. And then, of course, like I said, all staff within the secretariat did the police screening, and because I was DDG prior to coming to the civilian secretariat for police, there's a special kind of screening that I had been needed to do, but that is not the same as vetting. So, as indicated in the previous meeting, all the staff in the secretariat filled up the Z12 forms, and we submitted it to Fed Security in December. Then, following the meeting of the Portfolio Committee and the interventions by the Portfolio Committee, Mr. Dlodlo came to see me on Monday, the 11th of May. So I want to thank the Portfolio Committee for that intervention. I do believe that he had indicated that the delay meeting was because of my unavailability. So I think it's a possibility. I open up the possibility that because our diaries are not coordinated fast, there might have been a deception that I wasn't available. But definitely from my side, I was available and I prioritized the meeting, and I'm pleased that we had eventually met. And at that meeting, we agreed on the process and we said, okay, we'll prioritize who are the senior managers within the secretariat who will get first attention at state security. At the meeting, we also said, look, if security doesn't have capacity, then maybe we might rope in access crime intelligence. Mr. Lolo then told me that no, state security will be able to ensure that they can service all of the staff within the secretariat. I also believe that last week it was indicated that only two forms were submitted. Now, I gave the list of at the meeting of the aliens, I gave Mr. Dlodlo a list of all the forms that we had submitted. And I had indicated to him that if there are any problems with the forms related to that list, then he must call me directly, and I gave him my cell number. So I've been following up with him, not telephonically, but in writing, to hear what are the concerns, who are the two forms that he has, and what are the forms that he's missing. Because according to our records, we've submitted all the forms, and it's not a problem for us to resubmit those forms. Then even though we haven't been formally informed by state security, I have been informed by my staff that the vetting process now has started, because the references of staff have been contacted, and the references obviously informed the staff that state security has been in touch with them. So there's been some movement in respect of state security, and I'm very appreciative of that. Thank you.
Right, that is the presentations. We will now go to questions from the honourable members. Honourable Ramadrakani, what thoughts from your side?
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chair, quickly, and both presenters. Both from the first, the IPED presentation as well as the secretariat. You know, the issue about factual information and the correct information, that's what we work on. We work on the basis of anybody that appears before the committee tells the truth about what happened. It may be difficult, but at least when we sit across the table, we expect that we hear the truth from all the officials, from all the state officials. That's the basis of each function. Now, from the presentation of the state security and the problems that they have reported to us that they are encountering in the process of vetting, that was cooperation, the submitting the forms, and so on and so on, to this presentation of your both bodies presentation, clearly there's something that is not telling. There's something that's not meeting here. The unfortunate part is now you are here, he's not here. We're hearing, listen to him last time. So we're almost like mediating in noise negotiations in different rooms, shuttling between the two to try and make the party to agree. Now, I don't know, Chair, how we deal with it, because I think that I'm looking at the IBED and the submission date and when was submission and non-compliance to 2012, 13, 14, 15. When the gentleman said, Chair, he said it takes 4 weeks. He said, we can do it in 4 weeks. It's a matter of prioritizing. Yeah. 2 weeks. So that's what he gave us an impression that this can be done quickly. And now, when we look at the 2013 and 2012, it's not done. In 2010, so then somebody was not telling the truth. Now we need to find the truth. Our business here is to make sure that things get done as it's supposed to be done in terms of the act. So I want to make that as a first point, that somewhere in the presentation here, something is just not getting together. Now, what have you done, both of you, agencies, when you submitted and nothing comes out of the machine? Because you're responsible. At the end of the day, you must make sure that people are in the organization are vetted because they are dealing with sensitive information. What action have you taken to make sure that the compliance happens? Because this is also individual driven, because individual must be given the forms, sometimes intimidating forms, but they are compliant, they are expected to fill those forms, and you must stand and say they must do it. So what do? You wait for a year, 2 months, not hearing anything, and it's okay. I want to know what you have done. Now, unfortunately, I said you are you in that seat, but you unfortunately go with it. You take the job with its problems. What has manager do? Because the failure is also from management to make sure that this happens. So then, from the secretariat as well. You know, the one stuck, the thing that stuck in my head is the projection that has been projected by the state security gentleman, a DDG. He is a DDG, actually. He said then, he said, Secretariat has not been available. I have been asking meetings. Meeting has not been confirmed. It is basically not my problem. It's Secretariat's problem. We ask him for evidence. He said, we'll give you evidence for this. That's what he said. That shows that weakly they are guys that are not compliant. Now, we sit again and we hear, no, actually, somewhere there is a problem, slippering of things. So I'm just saying, Chair, that I want to register that somehow as a committee, we do need to hear the voices of these bodies in one room. Because I would like to know, should I take you on your word? Should I take what you give me as a correct? Or should I second guess it? Say 50% of what you say, maybe so correct, 50% I take with a pinch of salt. So I would like to say that now, this is what is presented here. For me, it presented the problem that we did still want to talk to Mr. Lebron in the meeting here so that he at least explained some of these things. And he explained the discrepancies, huge discrepancies. If you say, acting head of IRCAD is one of the people that are not necessarily in the better bracket. And actually the results or the information proved contrary to what he actually was saying to us. That's for me what I my difficulty. So I'm saying, Chair, all in all, perhaps my humble opinion that we would probably need to have another round of discussion. It's just creating meetings after meetings. But because of the information that is half close to where it should be, and we are unable to... Now, what are we going to say in our report in this? We can't say anything in our report except to report that there are discrepancies between all the figures and all the people that are dealing with this are sitting in a room, in different rooms. That's my humble opinion here on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know, how long does it take for an appointed person having this pre-screening done on him to be given a red form for vetting? Because this table here, it has got eight people who received forms on the 21st this month. And it doesn't show when they were screened. So it's a little bit difficult for me to assess how long do you take to issue that form after pre-screening.
Chair, just have one. It relates to the action plan, point 3. The memorandum of understanding that's got to be added into, or in the process of being added into, between IPED and state security. And it has to do with the mandate of vetting, constitutional mandate of vetting civil servants and agents which provide service to government and for government. Where does that mandate lie? You have alluded to the fact that there seems to be a difficulty by SSA recognizing your training capabilities as a fetching unit within IPED. How do we then obviate that situation? But then, critically, where is the mandate to do so located? Thanks.
Yeah, this is quite gobsmacked. Having had General Sithole here, and literally he stated categorically that the Secretariat, the IPED, and that's all your fault.
Maybe just is Mr. Dadla from State Security, not General Sithole. General Sithole is the Deputy Commissioner. From the previous briefing, he said gentleman with a uniform.
Absolutely, General, my humble apologies. You're not that odious man. But he really categorically stated this, and they now have come with lists of people who have clearance for many years still to come. So I agree. Somebody lying through their teeth. Now, we have the list. We have a date. And he came here very aggressively saying that the Secretariat was simply not available to him. He said from December until May, and he claimed he'd written endless letters and that there was no response and that he would prove that to us. I don't know if we've had any proof arrive, and that he could do a clearance in 2 weeks. And even though, what I find a bit odd, that the SSA is responsible for vetting all government departments except the SATs and the SANDF, who have to request them to do the vetting, he then said, I put in the secretary, it's not my responsibility. So I don't know whose responsibility he then made, maybe somebody else in his division. He said they're the responsibility of SATs crime intelligence. So there were some strange undercurrents going on there, but he then went on and said, we can do a clearance in 2 weeks. He then basically took any modicum of blame and blamed it on everybody else. So it was the IFAD's fault, it was the secretary's fault, everybody's fault, but their own. And I agree. I wish he was here, because we could just put them facing each other and say, talk, or fight it out or something, because what we've got here is an absolute, I don't know, are we wasting our time here? We have proof from one side, we have claims from another side. And proof was going to arrive, but hasn't. So we're sitting in a very bizarre situation, Chair. I'm quite happy to accept the bona fides of this document, because it gives days, deaths, expiry dates, etc. But the fact that should they didn't exist, I mean, he stated, for example, that the acting head of the IPED had no clearance. So it went on. So it was a very bizarre encounter all round. It didn't seem bizarre at the time, but it seems extraordinary right now. I don't know, Chair, we're looking for a way forward, and I can't imagine what it's going to be.
Well, thanks, Mr. Mel. I don't want to belabor the points that have already been made, but I just want to also express my, shall I say, dismay at the discrepancy of the information that we are hearing here and the one that was given to us before. So I do want to go along with the suggestion that perhaps we need to hear these voices together under one roof at the same time, so that we are able to assess for ourselves where the discrepancy is, because it is very concerning that this committee should be actually given different information, you know, which cannot actually help, which is not helpful to us to make any meaningful oversight that we need to be doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to commend the IPED for establishing a routine unit. It shows that they are serious about vetting. But my question is, why would the SISOCO, the comment is reapplied? Can you have an explanation of the reapply? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Murphy.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. One is on the question of State Security not recognizing the vetting, whatever, that is done by SAFS. I would like to understand how does that come about? Why do they have to be retrained? And if there's one other question that was said by State Security, that there was a cabinet decision 10 years ago that they must be allowed access to criminal records and fingerprints and so on and so on. But according to him, there's a reluctance from SAPS to do so. So that hasn't been implemented as of 10 years ago. If that is true, I would like to understand what actually is the problem there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Members, for questions, I think the general agreement, we'll have to have everybody the 24th of June. We will get SSA everybody. That's the only slot we've got this quarter.
and maybe also from the Secretariat, also maybe an action plan similar to the one that was presented by IFED, you know, that we deal with this issue for once and for all. If there's any technical issues the members want to, or the delegations want to deal with now, they're very much welcome. Yeah. Mr. Khamenei.
Shabdasan, what great I can with my parents that expired in 2020. And for whatever that was presented here by the IPED, we can back up that with the records that you are having. If the portfolio committee wants us to send those particular documentations in the form of acknowledgement together with the date of our submission this to the SA, we can do that. Our records are very up-to-date at the IPED. Since even before the establishment of the IPED, during the time of the ICD. I'm saying this because Mr. Dodro acknowledged in his presentation that they are having capacity constraints, they are stressed as SSA, and that particular reasoning is the one that has been given to us as the IPS, and when each and every time we are making follow-ups in respect of our outstanding submissions or the stabilization of the security clearances for our members. Fortunately, I've been in the department from 1997. So, they have each and every time raised the issue of capacity. The second issue, it was the issue of IP was not a priority department. And we have asked them several times, what do you define a priority department? Because you want us to be included in that kind of definition of a priority department by SSA. That's one thing. And hence, as the IPED, because of the frustrations of submitting and not even winning and making follow-ups, because even the deputy director, security services from our office, she's having written follow-ups that he has been doing sending to SSA. With regards to making follow-ups as far as, with regards to how far are they with our vetting issues. But that frustration, hence we ended up establishing our vetting unit so that they just have to play that particular role of making sure that the vetting is prioritized within the IPED because it's prescribed. We don't have any other option. But in respect of the pre-screening, because there is a difference between pre-screening and security clearance or security vetting. The pre-screening, we do it for all staff members before we employ them. So it takes them plus minus a week or 2 weeks. But we never sign any appointment letter to a person without a pre-screening sort of certificate from SSA. So it's different from the vetting or the security clearance. Immediately after you come on board, we are supposed to issue you with the vetting force where the process of the vetting or security clearance starts, because it's a lengthy process that can even take more than 6 months. But because of their cabinet decision, they were saying, it says let's do the pre-screening before employment, not the vetting. The vetting will do it as and when that is in the system. In respect of but the MOU will address that particular problem, and even the monthly meetings that we are going to have with SSA on a monthly basis. And I think most of the things there, some of them, they will be addressed on the 24th, but I want to reiterate this, that as the IP, we can back up whatever that we have presented here in a report and with the evidence that you are having as the department.
Thank you, Acting ED, Acting Secretary.
Just to echo what the acting chief said of IFED, that preschooling, it's standard in the public service. Before you get appointed, you'll be preschooling, and then the security vetting form gets issued on the very first day that you start the job. So, yes, that is standard. Then from our side, I wanted to just reiterate that we have met now with state security following the intervention of the committee, and the process has been identified, and state security has in fact started the implementation of that process. There will be a meeting has been set to deal with the discrepancies, and I was hoping that the portfolio committee could at least give state security some time to implement what they had committed to. But if the portfolio committee feels that we should meet on the 24th to come and report our progress, it's definitely, I think that is a very fair request. Thank you.
Right, members, thank you for the presentation by IFED and the Secretariat. We will on the 24th, as per the decision of the committee, have both of the all three institutions to give us feedback on where we are. But I think progress, I mean, we've got 4 weeks left before that meeting, so hopefully a lot of work can be done, especially vetting. So we're looking forward to that interaction. Omo Bisa, you want to raise a point before I close?
Before you close, I don't think my question was answered appropriately. I understood what you said, but then my question is, after prescreening an appointment of a person, how long does it take you to issue that form to that person to fill in and submit? That is my question. Unless if I missed you.
Those who remember, electoral tech is supposed to be on the first day when the person starts to work. But in practice, it doesn't happen like that. But we are in the process of finalizing our vetting ED directive or manual guidance guidelines that will address the particular issue. Yes.
Thanks for that response. So thank you very much for your presentation today. Just to indicate to members, next week, of course, we're going to focus a bit again on the Central Firearms Registry. We will also have to have an update from SAPS what they did since our last meeting. We will also have four organizations coming to the committee, but at 9 o'clock we're going to adopt two reports. So it's the report on the forum we have, the conference, so if members can be at 9 o'clock at the meeting next Wednesday in Pitop, and then at 10 o'clock we will start with the Central Firearms Registry and the four other institutions. So thank you very much for your participation and good luck. Thank you.